good to avoid this. Hey, Craig is there. Hello, Craig. Please speak up.
Yeah, I just called in Craig now because, like I said, I was messaging with Chris on Skype, and he said he'll be coming over here in a little bit.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so get old Craig warmed up.
Cool.
Yeah, the bad thing about Craig, though, he doesn't delete the dead spaces automatically.
Yeah, this is, I don't know.
I wonder if there's another program.
Yeah, there, something like this.
There's probably a program that can, but it's I wouldn't want to pile more steps on Kelly. She's already having to do the legwork, so.
No, we just have to avoid dead air, right? I mean,
that's it. I'm not the best host or moderator around, though. So yeah, if you want to take that role, go ahead. Keep it going.
Yeah, you know, I will always keep talking. So you have to stop me maybe more than the other way around. Well, that's good. That's good. No problem.
Oh, it looks like we lost Phil.
Yeah, well, he will be back, I think. And Chris is there. He's listening in, but he's not speaking. The other Chris?
No, haven't heard him yet. That's Chris 746 that we're talking about. Not to be confused with HBC Chris.
Yes. Sorry, Chris. I called you the other Chris. But I will call you Chris 746. So 11 times 6, 66. Chris 66. No, you're not here to talk, so that's fine.
Yeah, don't go all numerology on me now.
No. that's the thing. That's what English James and we have in common. You have noticed, right? Our sarcastic humor and so.
Hello.
Hey, Chris.
What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up, Chris?
Hey. Listening.
Cool.
So yeah, we just bombarded you, Chris, to solve the dead air. We cannot have dead air. So tell us what's on your mind.
Not much. Just listening.
Okay, cool. Have you been following the case Miles Mathis? It's over at Peace of Mindful and the other blogs of Josh and so, or not?
I haven't been following Peace of Mindful.
Okay. No, it's about Miles Mathis and so on.
Yeah, I did read maybe half of the... Did they post two papers or whatever blog posts on Miles Mathis or just one? Because I read about half of one and then read a bunch of comments.
I probably
read more of that than I ever read Miles Mathis, though. Like...
Okay.
I read maybe equal amount of a Miles Mathis paper, and it didn't cut the mustard for me.
Yes, Evan, I read the Peace of Mindful.
What are your thoughts on it? I mean,
I don't know. I don't think it's very convincing.
In terms of what is convincing?
I mean,
they didn't have much evidence, did they?
Yeah, there wasn't much evidence
of anything. They pointed the finger that he's prolific, and maybe that's a I think everybody's had that thought probably, and there's not a whole lot you can make out of that.
I mean, the only evidence is like his like great 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 grandfather was a millionaire, but I mean that's about it.
Yeah, well, I must say, I like that post by Kevin Starr. I mean, Kevin Starr, he was a guest writer. If it's the same guy, but I assume so. And Miles Mathis claims he's not, but I think he is, because maybe he is not. I don't know. I don't care. But he was a guest writer, and he wrote a lot about the actors in Hollywood, like of the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and so, and how they're related to each other and to the presidents and all that.
And how they were all lesbians too.
yeah. That was crazy. Yeah, well, and then, but I found that his piece very good, really good, because he went into the genealogy like Miles Mathis did, but much better and with much more clarity and links and so and screen captures and all that, right? I mean, like, you can follow it much easier than just names that Miles Mathis is throwing around. And
well, I can say that
some
of Miles Mathis's, you know, genealogy research, it's kind of a stretch.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
If the person has the same last name, he'll just automatically assume they're somehow related.
That was my issue. That's what why I stopped reading when I tried to see what dude was about. Yeah, it was like he didn't. It was obvious that was all he was going off of, and nothing was linked like to genealogy that you could research on your own. Yeah, it was. He would go and say, like, somebody's related. They've got one last name, say it's Smith. And he'd be like, oh, they're from the Smite from over here, because Smith came from Smite. And like, it just reaching completely.
Yeah, and then so if someone's last name's Taylor, that means they're, like, from England and they're royalty.
Yeah, that is the thing, but that is the great thing about what Kevin did. He just used that same approach, but then even better, and then boomeranged it back to Miles Mathis.
It's still flawed.
Well, if it is, it shows that Miles Mathis' work is flawed. You know, it's the boomerang effect. I really like that.
But his work isn't just based on the genealogy, though. It's based on, you know, other stuff. Good analysis. I think, anyway.
No, I agree, and I also still like that. But his response of Mathis was like, yeah, I didn't know about my own family. I cannot imagine that to be true. I did my own genealogy before discovering Miles Mathis. And, I think it's cool. If you do it for yourself, and if you do it, it's nice. But if you read it, it's boring, and so it can be boring.
Oh, I think he acknowledged his genealogy.
Mm. Yeah, but now there's a whole thing going on and so on. But finally, he's speaking publicly, well, at least if it's him, but I think it's him, on this blog of Josh. But
isn't Peace of Mindful like a Miles Mathis centric website? Like,
it used to be.
So.
No, not really. What happened was that Mark Tokarski, he visited Miles Mathis there in Taos, New Mexico, with less than 6,000 people living there. so he got to know him in person. And I believe him, and he showed photos, and come on, he's not making that up. Well, maybe I'm too naive, but no, I think that's true. And he liked the Miles Mathis' work, so did other commenters and writers and so on, including me. And via Miles Mathis, I found Peace of Mindful. So, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you can change your opinion, and I think that's healthy, right? I mean, you learn new stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, as long as you don't assume what you're reading is fact. Yeah, if you look at it with a skeptical eye and take in the good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, that we have a major disagreement with other channels doesn't mean that somehow everything that is written there is wrong or so, or that Simon Sheck now publishes a faulty model. I think that doesn't mean that September Clues is suddenly not right anymore. Of course it is, right?
Yeah. I mean, if I had to agree with everything, I would be very limited on shows to listen to, podcasts or whatever, stuff to read.
You could even divorce then,
Ed,
right?
Opperman,
Ed Opperman.
Yeah, I'll listen to Opperman sometimes. I mean, that guy couldn't be much further from where we're at, but you could still get good nuggets from.
Yeah, I'm looking at Opperman on YouTube. The Opperman Report.
Yeah, that's the guy. I'm not trying to plug Opperman right now.
No. Home of Life Change Tea.
But yeah, that guy gets like guests that are kind of like too good to believe, like that are connected to these psyops and stuff, like actually a part of it. He doesn't interrogate them like it should be done for who they are, but it's still interesting sometimes.
Yeah, so it's a bit like this American Life show that Ed likes, or not?
No, it's not overproduced like that. It's still seemingly small time, but
okay.
Maybe similar in that it's more entertainment, maybe.
Okay.
But yeah, that's on NPR, the This American Life.
Mm. Yeah, I know. Yeah. But I listened to quite some shows, and it was like you say. I mean, they did interesting stuff, and I mean, there were things I didn't know about, and they. This massacre in Guatemala, yeah, well, I think that is real, that happened. I mean, how easy is it just somewhere in the countryside where nobody is watching you and you send out a military group to get rid of people who may form a hostility because you have a big landowner who wants to build a finca there or something like that, you know? Yeah, I mean, I know that is happening here in Colombia too, so... to hear about such things and you get good info from many things.
Yeah, for sure. It's the only way to know what the narrative that they're going with is. You gotta take in some form of media.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
I mean, it's probably better not to, though, you know, in reality, just if that would be possible.
Yeah, well, that's what I do. I completely, everything is now, I'm just at this forum and that's, and on Peace of Mindful and here on the chat, but that's it. I've lost interest in going into the next plane crash and analyzing it like before. I know it already, you know. Not really. The broader...
It's boring after a while.
Yeah. No, this, what Hoaxbusters is for me, it's providing much context, much more broader view in culture creation. And I think that is much more interesting.
Yeah, I think it's more important, that, you know, regardless if the story's real or if it's fake, the fact that it's on the news is because it's to influence and manipulate society or culture in probably multiple ways, like both the real and the fake stories. So that's what I think is more important and more interesting, trying to see what they intend with any given hoax or media event.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, it's like, I see it a bit like like steps or levels or so, and then once you have seen the first level, first level, I don't know which level actually, but once you have seen 20 fake terror events and 10 fake plane crashes and so, yeah, then you know, or stage, sorry, I should call it stage, but yeah, then you know the drill, right? Literally. No need to repeat that same process again and again.
That's why Miles Mathis is a good resource, because he kind of goes even further, you know, he exposed the Bolshevik Revolution is fake, and Hitler's rise to power is fake too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And that just doesn't
prove like one event is fake. It proves like the whole worldwide system.
And that's what I found also interesting, these more historical things like the Crusades and Salem witch trials, and then Napoleon, and I mean, these times they really set the stage literally for the world today. Now, of course, the Second World War and Bolshevism and so, but yeah, that was funny because he published his Hitler paper just, I mean, a couple of months after I did my own research into that non-Zionism stuff, and yeah, well, he came to the same conclusions and new points and different points. But yeah, that is also a part of the context, these historical things. Because what else is there then? There must be a start date when they started inventing stories. No, I don't think so. I think they did that already for ages and ages.
Yes.
And yeah, in the past, please.
Dude, I was just gonna say I was thinking about the possibility of you talking evolution with Chris. How?
No, man. I'm sorry. Awesome. I don't need to. No, I am. I know we have a difference of view there, and I know his views. And I've listened to this call with his friend, but it was a curator or so of a museum or something. He called. And we have different views, and I mean, I'm not going to change my mind. He doesn't change his mind, so it's fine. We have just a difference of approach. You know, my approach is, if you want to challenge a model, then provide a better model. And his approach probably is, yeah, no, I don't need to do this. I just don't believe it. Okay, that's fine. And we can, I mean, I don't see anything coming out of that.
But when does a debate ever bear fruit of one side changing? I don't know if that's really the intention of any debate being held.
Well, it's more for like people who are sitting on the fence, like the spectators of the debate.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but
I have to say Chris, I was kind of on the fence with veganism. I was about to like kind of start it. And Chris and Sarage on YouTube convinced me to go the other way. And I'm basically almost like full meat now. I feel great, a lot better than before.
Nice.
No, I mean, that's the thing as well. I mean, there's so many other topics to talk about, and it'll just be a repetition, right? I mean, no.
So is Chris coming on today?
Yeah, he said a half hour from now, and that was 9:06.
Okay, cool.
About a half hour.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's now in the same time zone as me.
No, but...
I think he's an hour behind the Eastern.
But he just said about a half hour. In, he said, okay, I'll come on there in about a half an hour. And that was 9:06 my time.
Oh, so okay.
21 minutes ago.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, with you, I have 1 hour difference now. In winter, it's the same.
Time oh, time. You guys don't do daylight savings time, huh?
No, we don't need it because it's every day the same.
Nobody needs it, dude. it's the most ridiculous shit ever. It's just some authoritarian experiment.
It's another way
that's true, yeah.
Interfere with people's lives.
Yeah, and I mean, what's a bigger display of power than showing that you can change time? Like, you can make people change their clocks. Like, I don't know. That really has always irritated me. I'm like, these people are telling me the time is different, and I got to go along with this. Like,
yeah, that would be a great resistance. To do that role in all your interactions, right? I mean, just stick to the other time and say, yeah, no, sorry, I don't accept the authority of changing time. So I'm 1 hour early or 1 hour late. Depends, you know? And let's bring that conscious into society. Yeah, that would be cool. No, but they used to have it here in the, I think it was in the 80s and 90s. And the rationale behind that was that otherwise people would have to travel from work in the dark, and that was quite dangerous at that time, I guess. And my wife said so I don't know if it's, how much of it is real, of course, but now it's not dangerous at all. But that was the rationale behind it.
There's so many excuses. I've probably heard 20. You know, it's that, it's farmers, it's kids walking to school. It's that they're
bug collector
compensating for the change in the sun. You know, already it kind of the daylight hours kind of shifts. Like, if you didn't mess with the time, it would just all shift in a natural process. Nobody would get jolted by it.
Yeah, the farmer excuse is probably the worst one, because they always rely on the sun anyway, right? I mean,
yeah, they're waking up regardless. So they're getting pissed just as we are.
Yeah.
Like, you're telling me it's this time now? Like, Arizona, I don't think they do it. They don't do the daylight savings time where John and Rich are at.
Wow. So there's actually just like one state where they don't do it. And in New Mexico, they do it or so.
Yeah. I think there's a few. There might be three or four. I don't know. Maybe more, but. Yeah, Arizona is one of them.
And then Florida is even more south, and they do it.
Yeah. Somebody told me something the other day that they heard that it possibly might get changed here in the state, but I don't know how concrete that is.
Yeah. Well, you know, in China, they only have one time zone. Which is crazy if you think about it, because
it's
so huge from east to west.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I didn't know that. That's pretty interesting. How many do you think it would be broken up into? Like three? Four?
Nah, not four. I think three, something like that. Yeah, more or less. And well, here with Venezuela, it's really strange because they do half our difference. Like India, I think they also have. So, and it's actually 1.5 hours, I think. So if I would, I mean, I'm here now, literally 100 miles from Venezuela, here in Bucaramanga. So if I would, 100 miles, that means like a 7-hour drive or so, really, in the mountains and so. But if I would travel to Venezuela there, then you suddenly lose or gain 1.5 hours. It's crazy.
Yeah. What I used to like doing when I used to drive, like for my job, and I'd be traveling and crossing time zones, getting paid for that extra hour. Because you write in your start time on your timesheets, you write in your start time and your stop time, but you don't say like where you're at. So
yeah,
like you just got a bonus hour. You time traveled.
Yeah, great. Yeah, well, I think maybe better than to start a conscious movement in society. Maybe that's even better, to just use the system to our own benefit, right?
Yeah, that shit. I always support anybody fucking whether you're getting food stamps or you got a good tax return, whatever. Like, I don't necessarily, I mean, I definitely don't agree with the idea of the government having so much control, and you know, the system set up in a way where people really end up needing that stuff. It's like, yeah, dude, fucking take it from them. Like, if they're offering something, take that shit and run before they change their mind.
I like that philosophy too, and I try to apply it as well. It's called agorism. Like, it's coming from the Greek word agora, which means market or a square. And also I'm doing it here as well, and not so much now, but trying to support the black market, right? I mean, the economic racists, they call it the black market because they cannot profit from it. But yeah, I mean, if you can get something tax-free, I'll do it.
Well, yeah, one of the only, I mean, the only thing I deal in like that is a plant that's quickly becoming taxed around the world. Like, that market is being infringed upon now, and it will probably disappear before too long. It's like, that's the only free market I'm aware of. I mean, I mean, how free, that's just in the part I'm dealing with. But in the end, you know, it's probably ATF and CIA or whatever are the ones setting the prices and making the money on it in the end. So how free is the market in reality? I couldn't actually say, but at least I'm not getting charged my sales tax.
Because here in Canada, they're starting to set up the shops, even though it's still illegal.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's like, it's the same price as it is on the street, so, I mean.
Right, wow. Yeah, that's
it's
what
really
I hear
like Holland.
When I compare.
I find it kind of odd that, like, well, wouldn't one guy just make it, like, $2-3 cheaper than everyone else? And then that would force everyone else to drop their price down, but it doesn't seem to happen. It always just stays at that same price.
They're in cahoots.
Yeah. Even the little tiny corner store shops.
That's the funny thing, because everybody thinks...
Yes, I guess maybe if they did drop the price, maybe then the cops... Because a couple of them have been raided by the cops. Like, the cops are very selective in which ones they raid. So maybe if they did drop the price, then they get raided.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point.
Sick the enforcers in on them.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a funny thing. I mean, everybody thinks that in Holland it's legal. It's not. It's illegal, but it's tolerated. So, and actually, I think in the U.S., they are the first states, like California, so, and I think those are the first states. Even in Portugal, it's decriminalized. That's not the same as legal.
Yeah, you got to. I'm Portuguese, so yeah, I know.
Oh, really? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. But I'm living in Canada.
But you don't have any Portuguese English accent. You were born in Canada? Or?
Oh, yeah, I was born in Canada.
Okay, but you're fully Portuguese or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Portuguese.
Oh, wow. Wow, cool. Where from? Lisbon or where from?
Azores.
The Azores, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how cool. Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, this place is amazing.
Fucking
eh?
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, cool. You're the first person outside of the Azores that is from there, actually. Wow.
Canada has tons of people from the Azores.
Yeah, there's a flight, I think, to Toronto, right? A direct flight?
Yep.
I was there with my best friend. He is Dutch, but his biological father is Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
Not from the Azores, but Portuguese. His history, he was conceived in East Berlin when his mother and his biological father were attending a communist congress in East Berlin. Yeah, and his father he met his biological father in Portugal, and he was a writer and so a very communist, very leftist guy. And his mother, she married, she was together with a guy. I don't know if she was cheating. I don't think so. But she married the guy who is his father. And then these parents also split up and they both remarried. So this guy has five parents.
Yeah.
But with him, that was someone, he lived in Lisbon, for a while. And then I visited him and, what we always do is, always in the last years, what we do is we have, we organize surprise trips together. And
yes.
His surprise trip was going to the Azores. That was actually the first surprise trip we did. And yeah, it was great. Really, I went to Pico. You know Pico?
No, I've never been. I know of it, but I've never been there. I've only been to San Miguel.
Yeah, yeah. That's where we, that was the second place we were. The people are so very nice there.
Mm-hmm, yeah. That's
very down to earth, very humble, very friendly, very different also from the rest of Portugal, I must say, because
I've never been to anywhere else. But I mean, just describing like the land, that place is like paradise on earth, eh?
Mm. Yeah, it's very quiet, and I love the way the people spoke, because I mean my Portuguese is really really bad, really cranky, and I speak with a Brazilian accent, so that's always fun in Portugal, but my friend's Portuguese is also not so good. It's better than mine, obviously, but it's not at all perfect. But then we were there in Punta del Gordo. And then trying to order something. And then, we both tried, and just ordering a piece of bread or so, you know, I mean, like a pastry, something.
Yeah.
And this old woman, I mean, who only spoke Azores Portuguese, I mean, she just couldn't understand us.
Well, the thing is, like my parents are from like a little village.
Mm-hmm.
So like the people from Punta Delgado like look down on people who speak with like the village accent.
Wow.
And then the people from Lisbon look down on the people who speak like the Punta Delgada.
Yeah. When we were there in Punta del Gol or something like that, we like to do Airbnb, so we were staying there with a family from there. And when we were there, there were the daughter and son were over in May. It was were over from London. They lived in London, so they spoke perfect English with a London accent. But they were actually from the Azores, and you also have flights, direct flights to England and so.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a great environment. I mean, really being with a local family. And you know, the typical thing, big table, always food, local culture, and so superb, really. What a really great trip. And I always recommend people to go there. Nobody goes there, so that's also it's making it great.
Getting more popular now.
Mm. Yeah, but still, it's not like the Canary Islands or so, you know. Or Crete or something like that, where people in Europe go.
Germans love Azores.
Mm. Yeah, also, I remember we were there, and then we were in a bar there in the center, and we met a seafaring captain who was making, not like cruises, but he was just like a captain at sea. And he was traveling from Lisbon to the Caribbean and then stopping, of course, at the Azores. So also lots of stories, very interesting, very nice, very friendly people.
Yeah, that's interesting about your buddy's friend. How his dad was a communist. Because in Portugal, the Communist Party is like, it's out in the open.
Yeah, oh yes.
It's a huge party, and then they throw like a concert festival in the summer.
Yeah, exactly. I shared the photo I took. I took it in Lisbon, where the Communist Party put. Well, actually, I'm far from a leftist, but they protested the euro. So I agree with that, and agreeing with protests against the European Union. So they were just out in the open there in the harbor in not the harbor but the beach in Lisbon, and there they have communist hammer and sickle signs and out with the fura o euro or something like that, you know, and
mm-hmm.
Get the euro out. I mean, the Portuguese, as a Dutch guy, I must acknowledge that the Portuguese beat us even in having the biggest world power compared to the size of the homeland country. I mean, we are second. We are smaller, but our empire was smaller. But the Portuguese, they have, compared to their size, they have done the biggest colonization in the world, right?
England, probably. I don't know. Is England bigger than Portugal?
England is, of course, bigger, but if you take all the factors in, right?
Israel.
okay. That's your one. Yeah, or you could say Malta with their colony in the, did you know that, in the Caribbean? There was an island that was Maltese.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I love these kind of histories and so, you know. Very,
but yeah, going on about the pot shops too in Canada now. They say next year summer, it's going to be all government run. The government's going to have a monopoly on it.
And where is that in Canada?
Ontario.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. That's what you hear from many smokers, that they actually, it's great, it should be legalized. And then in the beginning, I was thinking the same, and then I thought, no, wait a minute. No, it shouldn't be legalized. I mean, come on, it's a plant. Nobody should take tax of a plant. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I just don't want to be put in a fucking cage. If you can do that and still let me go see my boy down the road and fucking put money in somebody's hands without having to pay taxes, that's what I want to see. But and if it takes having to go to a store and not have to worry about, like I said, ending up in a cage, then that's the route that I'd prefer.
Well, here, 20 grams are tolerated, so.
Yeah, it's just in the last few months or so, it passed here or finally went in act or whatever, you get a ticket, I think, for anything under 20 or 22 or something.
Mm.
But it's under the cop's discretion. They could still choose to fuck with you, like they often do.
Yes.
You're in Florida, right?
That is correct. Yeah, I used to. Man, it seemed like they would, like I had a fucking cop magnet or something for a while there when I was younger. Just always getting pulled over. And they'd always like be wanting to search, or almost always.
Really? Yeah.
Like it gets offensive after a while. It's like, okay, yeah, sure. Maybe your intuition could be correct, but, I mean, you got nothing to go off of here. Like, why do you want to, you know, pull me out and ransack my shit? Like, get the fuck out of here. They got no business in my business.
Do you have any experiences with cops, guy, in Colombia?
Sorry, here?
Yeah.
I had one interesting experience. It was with my Dutch friend, my Dutch Portuguese friend, and with my German friend, two of my best friends. And we were together in Bogota. He was doing his master's here in this place where I'm, but we were in Bogota having a good time. And then, he was to cocaine, and I was like, doesn't interest me. So if you want to score that, you have to do it yourself. I'm not going to do that. And then he got it. And then we were walking there in a district where there's bars and so. And then, I mean, this guy on the fucking street. Yeah, I want to try it. So he tried it there on the street, and I looked back, and then I saw a police motor coming. And I said, oh man, oh fuck. And they stopped, of course. And they said, yeah, what are you doing here? What's this? And then I said, man, you have to talk to these guys. Well, he doesn't speak Spanish that well, so. Okay, in the end, I stepped in, and I talked to these guys, and then you have to go to the station with us, and then we make a report, and so, that's not going to happen, especially not with me there, working for an international company, and so on. No, I thought, that's not a good idea. So I said, no, we will pay you. And then I paid him 50,000. 50,000, that is in dollars, it's about $18, more or less. And then the police officer, he gave back the cocaine, and they went up. But the best thing is later I read in the Lonely Planet that if such a situation happens, yeah, of course they write stuff partly true and partly a bit invented from some desk somewhere in the U.S. But okay, yeah, you have to count on like 500,000, so that's 10 times the amount that I paid. You know, or we paid, he paid it yet, but yeah. That was the only experience I had. Yeah, I had one time that the cops stopped me and they want to search me and so. And at that moment, I didn't have anything on me, so I got my cigarettes and my lighter, and that's it. So no, nothing going on.
So the cops, they don't harass people as much as like in the city?
No. Yeah, no. That's according to the stories, and I think that's true. It used to happen, but in the mid 2000s, there was a big sweep because the police was like Eastern European corrupt, right? I mean, really stopping people and getting money from extorting money, all that stuff. And then they got a big sweep, and then the police was reformed and so, and now, yeah, they're just young guys. And no, I've only had decent experience and never, nothing like this authoritarian stuff in the U.S. No, nothing like that.
Yeah, in Canada, they harass you, but it's all traffic, you know, to get the traffic tickets and stuff to get the tax revenue up. That's about it. There's not much else going on.
It seems like here, that's what they're, that's the lie that they present for why they're pulling you over. You know, it's really to try to step it up into, a larger crime.
Yeah.
Yeah. The traffic stop is just a formality of trying to arrest you.
In Canada, it's just, they never step it up. They'll just ticket you for like basically nothing.
Yeah. They really don't like it when you don't comply either with their requests, and which aren't ever presented as a request. You know, they never ask anything really. It's all in the form of a demand. Like, you've got to know that you don't have to comply to even have the idea. So yeah, when you tell them no on a search or something, you can just see it. Like, they get pissed and they wanting to bring dogs and so on and so forth. I've never actually seen them bring the dogs though, and I've probably heard it at least 10 times.
Jesus Christ, really?
It's like another way to leverage, like, oh, come on, if you go along with what we say, you know, we'll take it easier on you. Don't make us bring the dogs out here. But you're not going to bring the fucking dogs. I got places to be. Get off my dick.
Have you seen that that channel that I linked to on my blog as well, of the social experimentalist?
No, I don't think so.
Oh man, it's so great! And in one video, I think it's called "Should the police take drugs" or something like that. I mean, this guy, he's a guy. He's like in his 50s. And he is standing there in London, mostly, also in other parts of England, with a megaphone, and he's just talking and so. And he knows how the law works, so he knows what he has to do and what he doesn't have to do. And he challenges the police all the time. And of course, it makes great street theater, is what he calls it, because he doesn't want to call it like philosophy or activism, because then you need the license and all that. So he knows his stuff, but it's so great to watch it. And how to deal with this authoritarian attitude. And then he says, no, listen, I just see you as a decent, normal human being, just like myself. It's just you have this city uniform on that you think you can be authoritarian against me and so on. Oh, he does it. I mean, really, you love these videos. I'm sure.
Oh yeah, there. I haven't watched any good cop confrontation videos in a while, but yeah, that's prime entertainment right there.
Yeah. Kelly also, when I found it out, I shared it with her, and also she was watching a couple of. I will look for this drug stuff, and then we'll later.
Rastaman.
Yeah, we were just talking about it.
I like that guy. He just comes out of nowhere and starts on this. Shuman, with this like humanity on your knees, and he just gives it this big like speech. Like if I had like 2 months to come up with, I couldn't have done it.
Good.
And then what's his name? The other guy, the guy with the Russian hat. I like that one. Do you remember that one?
Oh yeah.
That was brilliant. There's something extremely silly about these guys. Like, I keep seeing them in, like, academic papers and that, like, talking about, I don't know, I need to look it up again, but I seen an academic paper, and it was all about them and that. Well, fair enough, that doesn't really mean that, but they're kind of silly in the way that guy done. I used to believe there was 9/11, but I'm not a conspiracy theorist anymore. Like, who is... fucking does that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the thing, and that's, you shared with me this Charlie Fage. He's a Scottish guy, right?
But, I think so.
And they used to work together in the beginning, but then they split ways. I don't know how that happened and why it happened, but that's the thing. I mean, he doesn't go into conspiracies and all. I mean, but this is the one I shared now. Shoot police, take drugs.
There was a good one there was the one about...
I mean, they do, don't they? They literally take drugs.
Yeah.
They take your drugs. Yeah. And they probably don't take them all down to the lockup either.
No.
Some of them probably...
There was a local police guy got caught, like, reselling the drugs and that. I can't remember his name now. It was quite a while ago, but a guy actually got... A policeman got caught doing that here. It was a while back, though.
Yeah, I've heard stories. A dude I work with tells me about his younger days, and yeah, he would talk about the cops rolling up and just taking what they've got and going on along with their work with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not taking anybody to jail, but just taking their stuff and coming back and doing it, you know, a couple days later.
Yes.
Like,
I'm really like getting my head, like, it's hard to get your head around, Dave, but like the drugs thing, like how insane it is, how like unfair it is, and like just with the, you know, a lot of people go on about like how the cannabis thing has like shown a lot of kind of like true colours or that whole thing. Do you not think that the prescription of like the medication drugs to the children, I think that'd be worse. Like, you would go to jail on that if you were dealing that or whatever, caught with it. But they're giving it to kids in fucking primary school, man.
Are you talking about Grific?
Like Ritalin or whatever, like
Ritalin,
that kind of stuff.
Ritalin, this stuff.
the Grific program.
Like speed.
Yeah, Ritalin is speed.
Yes. So, like, why is that? You know what I mean? Like, it's fucking mental.
Our drugs are fine. I mean, the natural drugs, they are the problem.
What?
No, but if I do any drug, then that's not your problem, you know what I mean?
Of course.
That's the hang, I think.
It is.
Kalido.
Yes.
Have you heard of the Grific thing in Scotland?
So what was that?
The Grific.
Grific, G-U, not.
Getting it right for every child or something like that?
Now that you say that, it does ring bells. I bet there was like, this crazy thing, supposed to be, although I've never heard anyone directly affected or involved, but I don't know, maybe they just don't talk about it, I don't know. But because it was something like every child had to have a like mentor kind of person or something.
Yeah, they have to have like if they start at preschool and then they have like 9 months where like a government psychiatrist comes in every 9 months and evaluates the kid and has the authority to like put him on drugs.
Yeah, see, that probably does happen, but just nobody like, do you know what I mean? Nobody goes, that's mental. It's fucking insane. But
yeah, just, and now they're trying to implement a GRFA, which is getting it right for every adult. And
oh, yes, I hope they can get it right for me. That'd be great.
And so it's going to be mental screening. I mean, this is, I heard this on Alan Walsh's show.
Oh, yeah.
Mental screening for adults. It's like from ages 2 to 100 or whatever.
This country's fucked up. Like, it's just like the state's so overbearing. I mean, I know it is more or less everywhere, but I think they test the stuff out here or something, you know?
Yeah. Hey, Chris, good night, man. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing? Y'all doing all right?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Hey, what's up, Chris?
Hey, man. Can y'all hear me okay?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, good.
There's two Chrissy there. Yeah. Hi.
What are y'all talking about? I just now came in. It was mental screening or something. Is this happening at schools now? Giving like psych evals?
I heard on Alan Watt a couple years ago, and it's a government program. And basically what they're going to do is like, social worker will come into, this is what they want to do. I mean, the social worker will come into the child's house and do a psychological evaluation every 9 months.
Every 9 months even?
Yeah, cool. It's forced.
Wow.
And what if you don't comply with it? I mean,
I have no idea.
That's insane.
But it was, I don't know. I mean, this is part of like the news story is that, it was the French guy Sarkozy who actually like wrote the bill. They try to like pass it in Scotland. Yeah.
Wow. I think we talked about this before, all the new laws and policies that got implemented after Sandy Hook.
Mm-hmm.
And that being part of the program to bring in that type of thing and start getting more intrusion into more intervention in the lives of like children as they're growing up and get these like school counselors and shit to give them evaluations and yeah, and it's all in the name of, oh, we have to prevent another school shooting or school violence or suicide prevention or whatever. I mean, that's why we've been seeing all these stories related to that. And now they've been phasing all of that in.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle,
do you know of any, did they pass any of those laws after the, that Florida shooting?
I haven't followed any of that. I didn't even know that there were laws, that could be passed. I'm really, out of the loop on it.
I think actually that is the bigger and more important agenda of all of these events than terror or Muslims or this kind of thing. That has worn down and that it's just the side agenda. I think the main agenda is that people are disturbed. And one story that is what was shared at that other channel, but it was in a public chat. It was not recorded, but I can share it here because it was public, right? It was not a private conversation. But the guy from Australia, he said, I mean, he explained how the law is working there. And you have to get, I mean, when I heard it, I was like, I mean, what kind of a dystopian science fiction movie are you talking about? But it's the law, apparently, in Australia, that you have to get mandatory injections from the government.
In, injections, like so-called vaccines?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And if not, you will not, I mean, if you're getting state support money, then you won't get your money. What the hell? Mm. And this is by law, you know, and it's so-called legal.
And lots of folk will be like, yeah, that's quite right, you know what I mean? It's like, see that kind of group that goes along with it, man, that is like, there's a fucking issue, man, honestly.
Yeah, it's protecting
they'll go
everyone.
Along with anything. They'll go along with anything. I really think so. That it doesn't even need to be well thought out, just as long as it comes from the right place. And
no,
they won't do anything.
That's the thing. The more of these events they stage where so-called no motive or deranged, delusional people, I mean, they started it off, I think, mostly with Oklahoma City bombing, right? That was one of the big non-real terrorists.
No, but
non-Muslim,
they kind of had a motive with that one. You know, they at least tied it to Waco, and they were some angry right-wingers. Like, it's not like these shootings or car things that are going on now where, yeah, there's no rhyme or reason to it, nor do they feel like they need one.
That's true. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, like the Las Vegas shooting, I mean, it's still unknown why this guy so-called did it, right? But people, and that's the thing, the more of these events they just stage, the more it gets into what Kelly says. I mean, people are just following it because they believe these stories, and then the more, it's like building a database, and then we can say, yeah, those events were fake. Yeah, but they cannot fake all those events. Of course there are crazy people around and going, taking their car and running over people. No, of course, I saw it on the news. They cannot fake them all.
Yeah, I was just looking up the mass shootings in the United States in the last, several decades. And, I've talked about this before, how when Obama took office, that the number of shootings increased pretty dramatically. But now under Trump, he's had more mass shootings under his administration than Bush, George W. Bush.
My God.
It's two terms. So this is absolutely just, I mean, and nobody's out there pointing this out, and it's not even being mentioned that this sudden, all of a sudden, massive increase in the shootings and school shootings and mass shootings and all of that. And it's just like, oh, it's just magically like a switch was turned on and all of these shootings start happening just consecutively. And so that, it's like I said before, they're not going to stop with that. They're just going to keep doing it over and over and over and over until they just wear everybody's resolve. They said that the gun sales have gone up in every past mass shooting except for the Parkland shooting. They said, oh, gun sales haven't increased after this one. So maybe that's true, maybe it's not, but that's the perception they want to generate, is that, the resolve of guns rights people and gun owners is being worn down. Now they're starting to talk about people who are formerly gun rights. You're going to see more of this where people are formerly for gun rights and now they've changed their mind. Starting to see this being put out there. So I think that's part of the agenda too, is just keep it going, because the majority of people aren't going to doubt what they see on the TV. And they'll just over time just wear everybody's resolve down to where it's going to be more and more acceptance of more and more controls. I think that's going to work.
Yeah, and finally, what I see happening is that they go into this, what the Chinese are already doing, right? I mean, this social credit scheme. I mean, it sounds like a Black Mirror episode, but apparently that's already happening. That you, yeah, no, if you're not considered mentally healthy person, you cannot travel by train or something. I mean, it doesn't have to do with guns or anything, just normal movement of people cannot even happen. Or you don't get a job because, or you don't get...
That's here, that is here. It's that's like Facebook and all that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's when they'll really look at your, they'll only send for you for an interview now, unless you're Facebook written or, you know what I mean? There is actual things like that that employers can contact now and get a breakdown on what your profile sort of rates you as an employee, I think. So that's here. And it's like, it always does that. It's like, oh, China, this, and the things are happening like here. But it's just the way they describe it.
Yeah, that, I must say, that is the great thing about being here. That is, I mean, people will call it like backward or so, or not so much developed, so-called developed. But that's the thing. I mean, people still, even higher up in the hierarchies or so, how you want to call it, they're still more human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, I put on my sorry,
slightly less sort of suffocated by a law and regulation and all that. You know what I mean? Because it's just
it's pretty bureaucratic, but like this robotic culture, it's not so much there. And I mean, I've put on my Facebook even as a background picture. I hardly use it, right? I mean, just now 2 years ago or so, I put there and a picture summarizing. Moon hoax, fake. Nuke hoax, fake. Titanic, fake. Holocaust, didn't happen as reported. And everyone who knows me and has me at Facebook, and I have like 1,000 people contacts or so from work and so as well, I mean, they can look at it, but I just get offered a new project. So it's not, they're not like using that
not
to stop you from working.
It's not an abbreviation. And, I just like heard a lot of it being used here, and I don't see why not. I mean, you wouldn't even really need to pay an external company or nothing like that. You just look, you know, and like most people put fucking everything up there. It's not.
Yeah, but that's what I experienced. The difference between Europe and yeah, US. I know a little bit in Canada, but not so much, but I can imagine it's the same culture. I mean, they don't need to see you in person and talk to you in person to get to know you. They already go with, oh yeah, you have a Facebook page X. So then you are that person, you're in that box, and that is how you are, and that's who you are. So not interested, like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here, it's much more personal. They need to see you, they need to talk to you, and then, so no matter what you put out there on Facebook or on Twitter or something, how you come across in real life, that is what counts. And that is a big difference with, especially Asia, where it's so really technological, you know, a bit autistic kind of way of dealing with people. And Europe and then the US and Canada and Australia. So they're like in the middle of that. And here it's, in Latin America in general, but especially here in Colombia, it's more like personal, the personal relation. And that makes it really, I must say, that is what I really like here, that the personal contact, that is still so very important.
Everybody just jumps online and just like, not let their children on it, just done, like just went for it, you know what I mean? Not what it's all about, I think. It's quite strange, actually.
Well, yeah, in Europe, or like in the, I don't know, if they have that in Scotland there, Kelly, with
what's that?
The gun. They have pretty severe gun restrictions in Scotland?
Well, it's just not really like a gun culture, so aye, they probably do. I've seen guns, but maybe for hunting, like rifle guns and that. But like, not there's a, I think even like that Dunblane thing, I think that put like a nail in that sort of a coffin, but you didn't really see them before that. It wasn't like there was a gun like culture or nothing like that. It's like if anything, it's like nice. Like Glasgow's all nice and stuff.
So they were a nice band, like in the UK, where...
Well, I don't know. Somebody was saying that to me. And if they have, I've not really heard about it. And if it's a UK thing, then it'll definitely apply here as well.
Like, apparently in the UK, they have, like, nice bands. So now that they've, have heavy restrictions on gun ownership, they've switched it over to knives. And they have like posted around in London like these knife drops where if you have a knife you could drop it into the box and hand it over.
Pretty mad, because I can remember
craziest damn thing I've ever seen.
That London did have like a gun problem. It did have it in Birmingham and kind of like a lot of the inner city big cities in Manchester as well. They had, like, gun problems, and I'm meaning, like, when I was kind of, like, I don't know, I think it was stuff, like, documentaries and stuff about that I was watching. It's maybe, like, 5 to 10 years ago, so I don't know why, because it's just never going to stop with all this, you know what I mean? What's the next Spoons or what?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know this. I think I heard something about I mentioned it, and I forgot about it, but look, December 14th of 2012, I believe, on the same day, they had a night in China, supposedly, and 22 kids were stabbed, but they all lived, and I was thinking, okay, why would they do that? Well, it's pretty straightforward as far as propaganda, where they're contrasting. Well, here's an accident that can result in death, and then contrasting on America, 27 people were killed, and it's pretty obvious that's what we need. But I'm not to talk about stuff on mass stabbings. I mean, there was one. I think
you're going a bit Martian, Chris. Your connection is a bit bad. You're going a bit Martian.
I didn't know if it was me there or.
Oh, am I breaking up? Yeah. Let me try to reconnect.
No, you're okay.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the mic or not or what's going
on.
It's
like the internet
now.
Connection. Yeah, no, it's okay. Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
But sorry, because I missed it. There was something in China, and then what was it? That the same day as Sandy Hoax, or what was it?
Yeah, same day as Sandy Hoax, they had an IT China where 22 students were stabbed, but they all lived.
Okay.
Yeah, and like you never hear about mass stabbings, but they just happened to have one on the same day as Sandy Hoax.
Like a ninja or something.
Yeah,
like a ninja attack. Yeah, so
with a rubber knife. You said nobody died. 22 people got stabbed.
Yeah, 22 got stabbed, but no one died. But here in the U.S. where guns are legal, they killed 27 killed it. It's like but that's the worst gun survival rate statistics, and like you have this Adam Lanza, which is he just he's also this expert sort of commando that goes in there and can just wipe out, you know, all those people with the rifle with no training or nothing. And yeah, it's just this shit is just silly, but it's
and the photo yeah. they show is a prepubescent boy.
Prepubescent.
You know, yeah. There's no way that kid could carry or shoot the gun, let alone it was such a cartoon too. That image, what was that?
Yeah, it's like the eyes have been doctored on it or something.
Oh, and there
was
man.
One like that about that James Holmes guy or whatever. What was
yeah,
that?
Yeah,
he had
yeah.
the same kind of thing done on him yeah. again, just to make them look nuts.
Yeah. I, sorry to interrupt, but it's related because I remember there was an attack in Holland with a samurai sword, but I couldn't find it. But now I found something different. It's on the Dutch news, so I will read it. It's in Dutch. It's in Florida, in Broward County. Do you know where that is, Carl?
Yeah, that's East Coast, East Central.
Okay. The 22-year-old Jovan Walker.
That's where the shooting happened.
Oh.
Broward County.
Okay. A 22-year-old Jovan Walker. He tries to chop a man to pieces with a samurai sword, and that was after he was arrested for possession of marijuana, and the story goes that he had to do that because of a ghost, a poltergeist, that told him to do this.
Oh, for God's sake.
It's this story, man. What the fuck?
Did he get off with it then? Oh, right.
At the police station, the perpetrator only talked about ghosts. It's all their fault, not mine. I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I bet lots of folk see silly things like that. Like, but you know what I mean?
I'll share the link anyway.
There's
a video, so-called security cam video, so you can watch it. I don't watch the video, but it's there. What the fuck?
Yeah, there's a website.
Sorry, sir.
So there's a website called The Truth About Knives. And if
right.
you do a search on that, you can bring it up. But it has all kinds of different articles posted about knife crime, knife statistics, stabbing statistics, and all that, and it's got a lot of stuff showing what's going on in the UK with their knife policies and all that. Like, you can't carry a knife, and if you get caught with a knife, there's all these severe penalties and all this stuff, and then it's pretty nuts. And yeah.
Well, that's been going around in Canada for forever.
All the same thing in Canada, really.
Yeah, you can't carry pepper spray. You can't carry anything.
Mm.
Oh, that's just...
Unless you got a special outfit on.
Yes.
Yeah, you have to have a magical suit that makes you able to carry knives and whatever.
And then you're not allowed out without it on. No.
Yeah, if you carry a knife in Canada, it's considered a concealed weapons charge.
If you're carrying like a pocket knife.
Yep.
Oh, bullshit. That's crazy.
What? Without any specifics on the blade? Like, here it's, I think, three or four inches would be a concealed weapon.
No, in Canada, you can't carry, like, anything. Like, if the cop can
see... Even, like, a Swiss Army knife with, like, a
blade. Knife.
Yeah, you can't have it in your pocket, yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's a tool. You
imagine
know,
getting done for carrying a butter knife.
We were talking about cops earlier, and like when I was, I don't know, around 18 or something, out skating with my friend, skateboarding, like we were getting in the car to leave, and a cop pulled up, and my door was open, and he saw I had
a letter opener, like, in the door of my car. And I used this letter opener at work for, sometimes I would deliver, I would do deliveries of packages and I'd have to open them. So I had it just for opening boxes. It's less sharp than a knife. You know, it's a fucking letter opener. And you know, he tried to use it as a pretext to search my car, and it was a big ordeal, and luckily skirted that one. But, like I was saying, they look for anything to just step it up, really. Mm-hmm. And yeah, a knife, and that's perfect. Concealed weapon is what he kept trying to say, and I'm laughing. Like, dude, it's a fucking letter open.
Yeah, like you can buy.
We can do reports for us, man.
Oh yeah, you could take a building complex with a couple of box cutters. So.
And what?
Yeah, but you can go to a Harbor Freight and buy a machete for like $10, and those are just this big giant knife, about a 16-inch knot blade on the thing, and I carried one around in my pickup, and I used it to chop down weeds and shit, you know, just in the alley. So if I pull up to the alley and I have like I had this bamboo kind of close to my drive, and I would just have it convenient there so I could pull it out and hack down some of that bamboo if it was overgrown. And I carry it around my car. I wonder if, or my truck, I wonder if that would be considered some kind of but it's a lawn tool.
Yeah,
it's also a lawn tool. So it's like, you got all kinds of stuff that are sharp implements that are tools, you know, box cutter being X-Acto knife, should be the blades and shit that are tools used for cutting open boxes or cutting open plastic or whatever. I carry a knife around all the time, and I use it for cutting shit, you know, cutting cord, cutting boxes, cutting whatever I need to cut. When I was out here at the ranch working, I used it all the time to cut shit. Where we're cutting bags open, we're using, you know, grout or whatever, or laying in this tubing underground for drainage and having to cut that stuff. I mean, Puck and I are used iron for shit. You know, that's why I carry one around. I've always carried one around. And the idea that you can't carry around a knife is just fucking stupid, man. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and I mean, officer, how come you can carry a weapon that can kill people with a bullet and I cannot have a knife? Can you explain that to me, please?
Oh, well, there's special god people in, but...
Yeah. I am not religious. I don't believe in that God you think you represent.
Well, you're not an adult. It's like that. It's like you never get to be one. That's why nobody acts like one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the beauty of statism.
It's horrible.
So if you're fishing or you're doing whatever, you have a knife for, you know, going outdoors activity or what have you, you might need to use it to sharpen a stick, or it's like, I was thinking about going to Canada to do some hiking, but I don't even think I'll even bother now. I don't want to go to prison for carrying a damn knife. That's just...
Chris, I was just looking into that stuff. I saw that actually Oklahoma is like the second or the third biggest state in the U.S. with a Native American population. And I can imagine that there are different laws for them or so, or they have control over some areas where those laws don't apply.
Your audio's breaking up, or maybe it's on my end, though.
I think it was your end, Chris. I heard him pretty good. He was saying how...
On my end.
Yeah, he was saying how Native Americans, Oklahoma has one of the biggest populations of them, and how do they... They must have... There he goes. Yeah, you see if he'll jump back in.
Oh, I just reconnected.
Hey, Chris. Okay. For Canada, it's mostly like the big cities. I mean, if you probably go hiking, it probably won't harass you. But
yeah, probably not.
Even in the big cities,
yeah, it's like you gotta have an alibi. You know, like I had with the envelope opener. It's like I had a good excuse. You know, you brought up fishing. You'd have to have it in your tackle box and hope that the cop doesn't want to be a dick. And chances are you'll be fine. You know, but yeah, having a fishing knife and then not having a fishing pole is just, it's going too far.
Yeah, I could be walking around in Canada with a beer in one hand and a Bowie knife in the other and just say, yeah, I'm an American. I don't know what's going on.
I mean, that's what I do too. I mean, I have a chainsaw in my trunk, and then once I get stopped, then I always say, I use it to chop off people Texas style. But just today, you caught me, and I was actually chopping up some wood. So thanks for stopping me.
Imagine if it's one of those big old, like, heavy, big black cannons in the back. coming at the back window of your car. Got caught with a cannon in the back of your car.
Well, they always think they're funny, asking, oh, do you have any hand grenades, bombs? You know, when they're wanting to pat you down or search you, it's a tactic, because they're getting you to answer. I don't know. I feel like it's a way to influence your answer and to get one out of you. Like, it lightens the mood in some kind of way, and then you just comply.
I mean, you can always say, no, I don't have that, but I have an envelope with anthrax in my back pocket. So please
search
me.
they'd probably say, oh, you must be CIA.
Yeah.
I think my connection is still bad. I'm going to try to reconnect again. I'm going to try to log out and back in.
Okay.
There you go.
In the meantime, I just, I remember that, I mean, when I was still watching this news in Holland, I mean, the craziest story I've ever read in any news whatsoever, it was, I think it was somewhere back in, was it 2000 or 2002, 2003, I don't know, I don't remember. But the story was that there was a guy standing on a crossroads, trying to direct traffic, but at that time he was wearing the skin of his mother. He just killed and skinned her.
Oh my gosh. Buffalo Bill is a lollipop lady.
yeah, like literally. Silence of the Lambs. While doing that, he was recanting Bible verses. No, really. I mean, come on.
That's multitasking, man.
I mean, this was a story in the Dutch news. Now it's beyond belief, really.
Oh, that's hilarious. I was listening to Alan Watt the other night there. I've not listened to him for a wee while. I think you've got to kind of, if you're coping with him at all, it's like a cycle like that, eh? Just a wee bit every so often. And anyway, when I was listening to this episode, I found it really funny. It was like, he's talking about a terror attack in Canada, and this guy supposedly went into their parliament building and started like shooting the place up, and there was loads and loads of like, just like completely mental news stories attached to this, like about the Prime Minister hiding in a cleaning cupboard and all that, and the other Prime Minister and other MPs got flagpoles, I swear to God, and made spears at the flagpoles and all that. Oh, it was crazy. And
how do they make spears? Oh, they just like took flagpoles and we're going to
And we're going after the terrorists. They'll be using the flagpoles as spears.
So the parliament building doesn't have any armed guards?
No.
Yes, it does, but not in that story.
Oh, no, yeah. They left him out of the story for...
Because I've been there, and he would have to, because where the soldier was killed, he would have to run like 200-300 yards to get to the front door after running over the soldier.
Oh,
I
really?
Think that was mentioned in it as well, that soldier one, I think. 2004.
Yeah, it was the same one. He ran over the soldier, and then... And then he went into the parliament building, crossed the lawn on foot, and then I guess some old man stopped him. It had a ridiculous ending.
It's crazy, the story. I just was laughing at how like pissed off Alan was with these stories. It was fun. He's like, really, really?
Uh-huh.
He's hiding in a storeroom and doorknobs on the door and all this. It's just like
did Kalita just disappear?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
She's dropped out there for a minute. Sound like.
Yeah, I thought I just heard her again.
I'm here.
Oh.
There she is.
Yeah, it sounded like you faded away, like you just walked away slowly from the mic and disappeared.
Yeah. I actually went on my computer, like I'm on the phone now for this, and then I went on the computer and logged into the Discord on that and here. So maybe it was that. I don't know.
So have you seen the prices of the liquor go up? Have they?
Yeah. Well, it's strange. It's not, like, I don't really notice it myself, as in, I don't think it's even in the shops yet, but I was speaking to some people and they're like, yeah, that's in, like, the new champagne in Scotland. It's like the cheap, well, the used to be cheap cider, that'd be like quite a posh, like, drink now.
Oh yeah, so it makes it perceived value higher. Like it's the good stuff now.
Yeah, maybe that's what they're doing. It's just like what to make this glamorous.
Yeah, so if y'all haven't heard about that, in Scotland they passed a law, and they said it's not a tax. They said it's just a legal requirement that if you sell alcohol, it has to be at a set amount per ounce.
Mm.
And so all the prices of the cheap booze just went up pretty dramatically. Some sort of initiative to stop drinking, which is just crazy.
It's just like Tesco's in the supermarket. They tag some of the drinks, so it's like, it's really weird. It's like, all the champagne and the beer and whiskies and stuff, they've all got the electric tags on them. But I started to notice, I'm like, that's really weird. There's like this cheap, rotten, it's like vinegar cider. I can't remember the name of it. It's like frosty something or something. And that's tagged. And so it's like, right, that's tagged because that's what the alcoholics come in and shoplift. You know what I mean? It's that cheap stuff. So that was tagged, and the really expensive stuff was tagged. And it's that kind of cider that they've put up. And it's just funny how that, I noticed that little tie in.
Yeah, so a lot of people who are alcoholics or, you know, they live on the street, like here in the U.S., they don't have any, they go scrounge up money to buy booze. They don't have money to begin with. They have to scrounge up the money.
Exactly.
So if it's a few more bucks, they have to, then it's just going to make them panhandle more. For that.
Or drink nail varnish or something, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or they'll maybe start drinking mouthwash at the dollar store more. Yeah. It's got alcohol in it. Or hand sanitizer or some shit.
Yeah, because in Canada, all the booze now, I mean, it's been going on for like 30, 40 years, but the booze, it's all government owned. So all the, you have to go to a government store to buy booze.
Wow.
It's highly marked up too. It's a lot more expensive in Canada than it is in anywhere else.
Can you buy name brand booze in the United States or in Canada?
Like, yeah, but you have to go through the store.
And the store is a government store.
Yes, it's a government store.
It's a special government liquor store.
Yes. You can buy beer at some grocery stores, but it's mostly, most of the liquor and wine is through the government store.
Wow.
Well, I bet you could buy beer anywhere in Canada though, can't you? I mean, people put away.
You can go to a bar. Yeah. You can buy it. You can buy booze. No. Convenience stores, no. No.
Wow.
You can buy booze at like a restaurant too, or a bar.
I don't know if they do this in America or Canada or anywhere like that. I don't even know if they do it in England, but I've noticed there's a trend where like places that you can go out and eat and stuff like that, and they'll, I don't know if they obviously don't sell drink, and they do like, but you can bring bottles with you, and then they charge like, what do they call it again, a cork fee? So it'll be like, you've bought that bottle of wine at the shop, and then it's like a cork fee. That's just weird.
No,
what's going
on. Canada, if you do that in Canada, you lose your liquor license for sure.
Yeah, if you've done it in any average place, you would. But this is something that's like been legalized, if you like. You know what I mean? It's definitely like legal to do it in the places that they do it. I've noticed that it's becoming a big trend. And if you think about it, that's, I don't know, it's probably quite profitable. You're not really having to buy the drink and all the rest of it. You know what I mean?
So they charge people for bringing their own bottle in.
Yeah, it's like £3 to drink a bottle of wine in this. My sister's telling me about it. I've heard it in different places. And so she bought a bottle of wine, and then it's like £3 to drink the wine without them selling the wine.
Wow.
BYOB.
That's mad, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what to say about that. That's crazy. So you pay to bring.
Yeah, it's like to bring your own bottle. And see how you're saying about the prices going up per, like, I don't know. They did have a thing I noticed that said that, but it was saying that like all drink goes up. It's not all. Drink though, like things like wine and that are the same. It's this like stuff like the severe alcoholics are into that they've done it with. So it's like it's kind of horrible, like.
Yeah, but I don't know if that'll slow them down or not.
Oh, it'll do nothing. And then I was like racing about on YouTube, is anybody saying anything? And it's just like this young guy, I was thinking, oh, he's going to be saying like, this is terrible. And he's like, no, this is, somebody needed to do something. You're like, oh my God, like, I just kind of lost it in this comment section. It's just really annoying that.
Oh yeah, all the people that people were for it.
You know, oh yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's, yeah, I don't understand that either. Like, what, they actually think that that's going to do a lot of good, but it's just some gouging scheme with the government getting involved. And
it's like they need
yeah.
a band of folk to do anything, don't they? It's like they need that band of folk.
Yeah, so they can control your life and tell you, you know, what things are bad and which things. And in the meanwhile, they allow the grocery stores and stuff to sell processed crap food that's horrible
mm-hmm.
for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can eat all that you want, which is the real damage. I mean, it's just as bad as alcohol. A lot of that crap that people eat out of the stores, it turns immediately into sugar. It's just carbohydrate junk that turns to sugar in your blood, and it's just as bad as alcohol. And it's what probably causes alcohol. It probably contributes to alcoholism. There's a lot
mm-hmm.
of stuff that suggests that processed flour and stuff, introduced into the diet will also give you a lot of people like craving for alcohol if they try it, because it's also
right.
sugars, you know. And it's but that's okay to sell just garbage in the stores. That's all.
Yeah.
And here in the States, the FDA approved and all that, but I don't know. I don't hear them crack. I don't hear much of a crackdown on alcohol here, or any suggestion of it. I mean, it seems like it'd be fairly free-flowing.
That pretty much came out the blue, that thing here. I never heard of it like about to happen, or they're thinking about this, or like what usually happens. I just kind of came out of nowhere. I was like, what? When I seen, I just seen an article or something online that was maybe about that, when it happened, I'd never heard of it before. Like the smoking thing, mental as well. They done that. They done that maybe about a year or so ago, and that's just insane. It's like, they put, remember I sent you, Chris, a thing showing you all the pictures and all that, that they were putting on the packages?
Yeah, and I think this is not so much that it's certainly not over, like what they say it is, like concern for alcoholics drinking too much. I don't think that's part of the plan at all. I think that it's just a long-term conditioning process so that everybody accepts these concepts that, well, smoking's bad, so the government needs to, you know, step in and raise the price on it, and that will save lives by, you know, people not being able to afford to smoke. And so it's so a precedent is set, and then people could certainly see, oh yeah, smoking is bad, so, well, that's a good thing. The government stepped in, and now, you know, they've put a tax on cigarettes, and now they're doing it with alcohol, and it's just a conditioning process to get people used to the idea. And I guarantee you, eventually it's going to be things like meat. They're going to keep on telling everybody that it's meat that causes cancer, it's meat that's bad, and they'll start hiking the price up on that.
Have you guys seen the Clint Richardson article? Where he basically,
what about?
It's a Clint Richardson.
Yeah, I quite like him.
Yeah, so he basically proved that like the government agencies, like especially the government funded pension funds.
Oh
have,
yeah.
Have huge majority shares in the liquor
never.
And the tobacco companies.
Yeah, that's the capper thing.
So then, what they're doing is they're just raising the price of like the liquor and the smokes, and then they're just reinvesting all that tax revenue back into the company so the company can grow.
It's mad. That capital, I like had to sort of concentrate quite hard on. I mean, there's other things with Clinton, the vaccines as well. Like it's hard to take in without like maybe having a wee jot on writing things in. And I kind of listened to that capital thing and went over the one from my area, and it's that is mental, that man. And you can like have a look at the companies that they invest in. It's all your 500, what's it, Fortune 500 people, and They own everything. They own everything. It's like, really, it's mental.
Yeah, so they're basically funding the addiction.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sort of backhanded stuff.
Yeah.
And then they're like, we've not got money for this and that and whatever. They've fucking got all done. Even without the Cather thing, man, they still would have loads of money.
Oh, and
taxes, you know what I mean?
But don't worry, all the government money is going to hire more teachers for the schools, right?
Oh, yay!
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And police, I need more police.
Maybe we'll one day have one cop assigned to every person. That'd be great.
Oh, that'd be brilliant.
You, like, follow you around.
I would feel really safe.
Yeah, because...
make you really safe. Super safe.
Canada, what, or Ontario, what they did was the lottery is government run. And the liquor is government run. The smokes, there's like it's like 100% tax. So smokes are doubled. And now they're doing the pot, which is going to be government run too. And they're saying all that money is like tax revenue. But we still have like some of the highest taxes in the world.
Well, Norway, Germany.
Oh, I mean,
Sweden.
Yeah. But we still have really high taxes, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, true. Hey, Cahem. Long time no see, long time no hear. Are you there? You're there, it says. Maybe you don't want to speak to me. That can be because I challenged Simon's model. Didn't she just?
Okay, I'm dropped in and then she dropped back out just now.
Yeah.
So, what, you have a disagreement with Simon's cosmological model there?
Not so much a disagreement. I was very interested in it, always. And I was there back at school for him in the beginning, and then when he announced it, then I started looking into the different models and timeline and the Persians and the Egyptians and all kinds of Arab, Muslim astronomers and all that history. And I still find that interesting. But in my interaction with Simon, I found out that he cannot handle criticism because he takes it personal, and well, that's what it turned out to be on the blog. I mean, he called me a bipolar imbecile and a Asia shill, and so I mean, come on, man. I mean, I'm just asking normal questions like anyone would do if you present something. I mean, and that's what I said. If you present something like that on a congress somewhere, doesn't matter what congress, somewhere in the world, I mean, you will get critical questions. And then I ask the question, what are you going to do? You're standing there on a podium, and then an astronomer, Simon, I've got a critical question. And then are you doing this same internet speech of calling out people like their names and so? Of course not. That is not how normal people operate in the real world. That to me. And then he called me a two-faced clown because I said, I like certain parts of your work, but other parts I don't like and I criticize, and I think that's fair with anything. So that's why he called me a two-faced clown. And but then that is actually what he did, because in our email context, what he did was I criticized one point, and he took that point, and then he said, "Oh, thank you so much, Gaia. I now have an extra argument for my work, and it's all great." But it was just cherry picking one point of what I pointed out. Yeah, I can use that point. And I disregard all the rest of the criticism that was actual the context of it. And that's actually what he presented later as well. And Bruce Firm, he published it like that. Yeah, I mean, and And well, now Chris, you're now Seneca joined Hoaxbusters too, because I already invited him before, and now he joined again. And now he joined, and this guy, he is the only other one who is critical about that model and about time and about cruise form in general. In the past, I've spent literally all the time I was there with on at cruise form, I was exchanging private messages with him because I could talk in Dutch. He's Flemish. He's from Belgium. So yeah, and it was great. And now, with this whole Simon thing, then he got pointed to Fakeologist, and that's how he got in contact. And now we're talking almost every day. And now he is also here at Hoaxbusters. But he is a really, I mean, he's different from me. I'm a bit more, let's say jumpy and, passionate and so. And he is a very quiet, very relaxed, person, very serious, very, like that, but yeah, no, it's great. He joined at least here. He cannot do chats in the evening because of his family, his children, and all that. But yeah, that's how it is now.
Yeah, just taking a bathroom break.
Okay. Yeah, and then just let me share what Questioning Our Reality is saying, that apparently I was banned yesterday from Fakeologist at all, everything, also the blog, and now I have gone to reinstate it. I don't know why, because I don't have any motivation to join there again. Yeah.
You were banned at Fakeologist Discord chat or the...
No, I left the Discord for a long time. No, it's the blog, because I asked questions about Dave J and tried to point out that apparently the standards of being civilized and not disrupting and all that doesn't apply to him. He can be called a controversial guy, but can slander and run around like crazy all the time, but and add his literal crap, because every sentence he types is full of mistakes, at the Fakeopedia, and so I commented on that, and then Faye banned me indefinitely from the Fakeopedia. I built like 80% of. Come on. What? Yeah. Well, that's how it goes.
It's like I told you, Gaia. You're better off doing your own thing. Dude.
I know.
Do your own blog. Like, don't.
No, I know.
With somebody else, because it ends badly. Just.
Yeah, I know. But
start your own Pedia. You know, if that's what you're into.
No, yeah, but I still support the concept, and my intention was, especially like sharing all the good stuff that was there, and before the Hoaxbusters call website got pulled, I had quite some links there. So if you want to know something about Event X, you go to the list and you click on the link, and you have the research there at your disposal. You know, I mean, at your you can use it, right? I mean, I think that is the real value of it. But yeah, I know. I don't have a grudge. I don't have a problem with it. It's good. No, it's fine. I have more time for other things. But it's just the way it goes, you know. It's silly.
Yeah, so I'm looking through the... getting some echo back. I wonder if it's a... going through somebody's speakers or something. I'm looking through the chat here with links. Someone posted this Strange Bird posted this vaccination film from 1940s. That looks interesting.
Where is it? Yeah.
Oh, that's over in Health Nut, hashtag Health Nut.
Okay, yeah.
Have any of the all seen that? D. Robinson, Magic Bullet.
Oh, cool.
Hmm. Dr. Ehrlich.
So he's playing Dr. Ehrlich. So, yeah, vaccination propaganda, 1940s. So it's a magic bullet. They sold it initially as
magic bullet,
cure for all disease, vaccinations, really hyped it up.
And that was before the famous magic bullet.
Yeah, 23 years before, yeah.
Oh, right. I didn't even think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Magic bullet and the Kennedy pristine bullet that went through. Like, jabbering here.
I put in a lot of effort to find a quote unquote vaccine that actually proved effective. And, I mean, just the word vaccine, by the way, it's, if you speak any romance language, vaca in Spanish is a cow.
Mm-hmm.
And vaccine comes from giving the cows some, it's like a, you know, you get the idea. It's like I don't know what inoculation. I don't think that has a specific relevance to this type. So you give it a weakened version of the bacteria or the virus or whatever, and then your body ramps up the immune defense to fight it. And it's better prepared to fight off what's already there. Does that mean that you should be injected with mercury? I don't think so. but they're like for the vaccines that are actually approved, or like there's no better name that I can find, so I'll just keep using this terrible one called vaccine, which is like a cow shot. Okay, so I'll use the word cow shot. The cow shots that they give already, I couldn't find any evidence that any of those had ever been tested and proven effective with any animal model. So like, if you want to prove that something works, then you have to make a model organism. You have to find a model organism. So say, for instance, some bacteria, like pneumonia, you can make an animal sick and then test if the medicine that you want to like a rabbit. So say there's a rabbit model organism for pneumonia. Then you get a batch of rabbits. You make them sick. Then you test the medicine and see if it works. And that's the way that the research is done. So I did find that there was an actual replicable study done on rats with a known pathogen. I mean, I think practically any organism could be pathogenic, but they made the animal sick. One group that had already received the cow shot and one group that didn't, and the ones that had received the cow shots fared better. They didn't like do significantly better. Like, I mean, there was some significance, but they didn't like. It was only mildly significant. Like they did, and it makes sense, right? Like, wouldn't you guys imagine that if you know, the organism has already pumped up its defenses, then and it's not at a huge risk. It's not that hugely beneficial. I don't think it's that practical to be doing this.
I think if your immunity is healthy. And your body is healthy, your immune system is going to work and it's going to function properly. And it's going to build defenses, when needed. So when you're exposed to something, it's going to build defenses and it's going to fight whatever it is, infection. And, the vaccines don't actually, and the thing is too, they're sold as a preventative medicine. That's the only thing like you actually out there that I know of that it's required to take it. It has some sort of preventative effect, and it's sold that way. But the beauty about that is that you can't, you don't have to prove that they're effective. You just say that they are. And then they'll, and they'll tell you like, correlation is not causation, but in the case of vaccines, it is, because they'll tell you that, oh, we'll see the instances of these diseases dropped off when vaccines were introduced. So therefore that proves that they're effective. Well, that's exactly what they say is an invalid line of reasoning, is correlation equals causation. But they use that exact argument to say vaccines work. Like there's a correlation between the instances of disease and the introduction of vaccines. But like if you look at diseases like scarlet fever, which is some, which there is no vaccine for. It's I think it's like a bacterial infection. It's not viral. But you don't see instances of scarlet fever anymore, and that's a disease that went away. Well, why did it go away? Well, it had something to do with something that is not vaccines, because there's never been a vaccine developed for it.
I'm happy if it works. If it works, great. Let's use it. But show me how well it works. How about that?
That's the thing. I mean, what they do is they fiddle with the results. And if it's like 51% with the vaccinated group of mice or rats or rabbits or what they use, and then 49% with the control group who didn't get vaccinated, this is proven. And then we just discard more data and more data. Yeah, it's just noise, and they can boost it up into 80-20 or something.
They've never proven vaccines or do anything. That's never been proven. It's never been tested.
There is one. I can show you one cow shot that has actually been proven to be mildly effective at not preventing it from getting sick. It did still get sick, but it didn't die in as high of numbers the group that received the cow shots. I can send that to you if you want.
Which disease?
It was just some bacteria, like,
vaccines work against viruses, not bacteria, right?
Some of the things you're meant to go through as well. See, like, the measles, like, it's not life-threatening, you know what I mean? It's just being propagandized to be like that. There's a total, like, this is even in the Lancet and journals like that, but it's like if you... people that have went through the measles is like toddlers or whatever, they don't get cancer later on. And see, if you've had the vaccination, that's not like going through it. You need to go through it. And
your system
needs to go through that to like do a stage of development. And if not, it's like open to cancer and that later on. That's mental.
It's the rubber towel mentality, but then in the medical sphere, right?
And then it's like, that's in the Lancet, it's in loads of things.
My point was that if somebody says that it works, and the question is, how well does it work? Show me proof that it, like, you can say that, like, this car additive gives your car better mileage. You know, put this in your car because you'll get better mileage. The question isn't at that point, okay, does it work or does it not work? It's, okay, how much extra mileage does it give my car? I think that's the most logical question at that point is, show me a study with some model organism, like a rat or a rabbit or a horse or whatever, that they get sick at fewer numbers or they get sick for less time. But
Phil, I mean, you know that the car companies, they're running the FDA.
What about do you trust studies?
If anybody can do a study though. I found this Let me see if I can find this again.
Anyone can run a study. The one who funds the study, who controls the results.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's been Sherry Tenpenny. She's got some interesting videos out, and she'll show you the statistics and the charts and go into how, like, you see the instances or the rates of disease decline, and show when vaccines were introduced and the correlation between the reduction in instances of these diseases and the vaccines. And when you look at the chart, it looks like there's a strong correlation there. It's like, oh yeah, see, vaccines work. But what she did is she goes back earlier, and then what you see is that the decline start way before the vaccines were introduced. Those diseases were already in sharp decline prior to vaccinations.
Was hygiene, right? The doctor washing their hands finally.
Yeah, so people start shitting on their hands or shitting out on the street and walking to it, like in. But that was all a consequence of living in tight quarters, like in some of the European cities, where they had pouring shit out on the street, stuff like that. And it's, oh yeah, when you stop doing that, people's health started getting better. It's like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Thing is, like,
walking around and shit, smearing on everything. Everybody's health got better. Oh, really? It's just like, yeah. But that's where these diseases get really virulent, is in cities.
Yeah, I was doing yard work a couple months ago, and I poked my eye on, like, a tree branch.
Wow.
Yeah, and I got an eye infection, and I went to the doctors, and I just needed, like, a couple drops or whatever. So the doctor said I should get a tetanus shot.
And I said
no, and then she said, well, I know someone who's died from tetanus. I still said no, and then when I went home and looked it up, it says that, like, the average of, like, 3 people a year in Canada die of tetanus. So, like, what are the chances? She's probably lying, because she's, like, a young doctor, right?
I mean, there's always an incentive, too, to hype something up, like, you know, like measles. Like, they really make that into be some, you know, killer disease. Like, it's horrible if you get measles. But, kids used to get measles all the time, and they used to have measles parties where it's like, oh, yeah, my kids got measles. Let's get all the neighborhood kids together so they can all get measles and get over it.
Yeah,
it was just a common thing.
I think my uncle, because he was home birth, he had, I think he got rubella or something. I can't exactly remember which one it was, but, I mean, he was sick for, like, a weekend, and then he was all better.
Yeah, and I don't think any of these diseases are much of a big deal to someone who's reasonably healthy to begin with.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody's already kind of weak and then they get something like that, yeah, it could be bad, but that can be addressed instead of, like, trying to come up with some vaccine or some bullshit. See, I think the vaccines are just, it's a total fraud.
It's
population control.
And it's the thing, they don't test those properties or characteristics, right? I mean, they don't separate between they don't separate between people who are actually healthy and taking good nutrients and all that. No, they just go with this causation fallacy.
And then that's the thing about science, you know, people say, oh, well, there's been studies done and it's been proven effective. It's like, yeah, but you got to be able to go in and actually read these studies and understand them and then pick apart all the different variables and all that and look at what's not added into the data set or what other considerations, like diet and stuff like that. And it's like nothing is that straightforward when it comes to stuff like that. It's like, it gets pretty complex. And then people say, oh, well, it's scientifically proven. It's like, well, do you even understand what that means? People won't even understand what that means.
That is the whole thing. That is the whole thing. I mean, many scientists don't understand the scientific method. I mean, scientific method is right. That is okay. But they don't apply it.
It's just guess and check. That's it. People have been doing that since the beginning of time. You just come up with an idea how something might work, test it out, and if it does prove to make sense, then you tell people, and if other people believe it, then they tell other people, and that's the way everything always has worked. There's nothing profoundly innovative about quote-unquote science. It's just guess and check.
Of course, there is some about science and engineering, and so I mean, you use stuff that works, right? I mean, go on. That is there.
Well, now you're mixing in engineering, but that doesn't bolster science anyway.
Phil, did you Google Joe Gamma?
No, but wait, just while I'm still at this, I have from the Journal of Infection and Immunity a study that's named Live Vaccine Strain of Francisella tularensis, Infection and Immunity in Mice.
That's cool. I don't believe in vaccines either. I believe in mice, though.
No. But okay, so... okay, so the last... I like to read the first and last sentences of the abstract of a study. So I'll just do that.
Phil, I'm gonna tell you a story. I went to law school. That's what I did in law school. You should be a lawyer.
I know I should be a lawyer. I really should be. I don't have anything that much against it anymore. They make a killing. So.
Well, Shakespeare's right about killing the lawyers. So.
All right, so the live vaccine strain of Francisella tularensis caused lethal disease in several mouse strains. This infection in mice provides a model system for analysis of locally induced protective effector mechanisms. So,
oh, you got a model, sweet.
Exactly. It, like, I've smart never guys. Seen...
Calling all smart guys, there's a model. Hurry up.
Oh, yeah. All right, you don't like the models. Shucks.
No, but all, every chemical substance, it's even defined on mice. I mean, the lethal dose for mice, MD50, exactly. I think it's called, that is based on mice only. So it's not based on anything else. Mice are the standard for defining.
What do you know about mice and the lethal dose of whatever? Are we talking about...
That is the standard that is used in chemistry and related sciences.
Hey, how can you tell the difference between two isotopes of the, you know, something that has the same amount of fake make-believe protons? How do you tell the difference there, Gaia?
No, we're not going into this. Thank you. Yeah, fine.
Yeah, you won't. Thank you. You're welcome.
All right, so they're talking about the LD50 of an intranasal, intravenous and intraperitoneal injection
Have you done that before?
Given mice intravenous injections? No, I have never done that. But I've looked it up on how to do it.
You ever done that? That shit you're reading about? You ever done it?
Done what? Done this exact procedure?
You ever done that shit? It's a story. I didn't
hear you.
Have you done it? If you haven't done it, it's a story. Sorry.
Yes, it is a story. I'm reading you a story, and then I'll tuck you in, Sean.
I've killed mice. I used to be a baker, so yeah. There were mice running around in the bakery, and then I dropped a plate on top of him, and yeah, they pretty much were dead. Yeah.
Talking about?
Well, these guys killed the mice by injecting them with bacteria.
Yeah, I never did that. No.
Bill Blanks is talking about some fucking study he's never did before.
Yeah, but...
Well, that sounds like...
All right.
Good, that's, you say that.
Oh wow! Oh man, this is gonna really throw me off here now. The people who did this study, and that's what you guys were questioning before, and that's what I was saying. You know, like look at the research and see, you know, who did it and how well it checks out. So the Department of Cellular Immunology at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research in Washington D.C. did this study. Walter Reed Army Institute of Research.
That's legit, ain't it, Gaia? Who do you work for?
Of course. I mean, DuPont did the study that Monsanto herbicides were no problem at all. Yeah.
Well, the thing about these studies too is that if you look at a lot of these studies, you have to go into it with a lot of presuppositions to begin with.
Chris,
hey, what's up?
Ask him about evolution and shit.
No, we're not going to that. No, we know we have a difference there, and that's fine.
All right, you know. All right. Hey, Chris.
Let me just finish. I'll read a little bit more of this abstract here. Regardless of the inoculation route, whether injected into the abdomen, injected into the veins, injected into the nose, the bacteria that were isolated from the spleen, liver, and lungs within 3 days of introduction, the numbers had increased in these organs over 5 days. In contrast to the other routes of inoculation, mice injected with the intradermal LVS, the cow shot, intradermally, under the skin, survived the infection. The LD50 of the live vaccine strain by this route of was much greater than 10 to the 5th CFU. The difference in susceptibility was not due solely to local effects at the dermal site of inoculation, since bacteria were isolated from the spleen, liver, and lungs within 3 days by this route as well.
Yeah.
Go be a vaccine guinea pig for a couple weeks, dude. Just be a vaccine guinea pig. If the vaccines
are don't want to fucking take this shit. I'm not planning on...
Don't worry about it.
Well, let me just say this about that, what you just got to say in there. It's that you have to go into it, like what I just stated earlier about with these presuppositions, like that's a valid and worthwhile thing to do to even begin with, to inject an organism with something to get them some kind of immunity to some sort of disease. Like that presupposes that that's a valid thing to be doing to begin with. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like you can go into a study and say, well, look, it's effective. But then that you're going into it with the presupposition that that's a valid way to approach disease even to begin with.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's like it's the unfounded premise that I keep hammering on all the time. It's like when you bring it up, you go into the science or scientific studies or stuff like that, you enter into a study with a foregone conclusion that specific activity or whatever they're doing is valid even to begin with. Like that you should be doing that even to start.
It's putting the horse behind the cart.
It has something implied there going into it. So you can kind of you go into it with this presupposition that what it's valid to begin with,
it's confirmation bias. I mean, that is what I say, it's the opposite of the scientific method, philosophically, right? I mean, not this whole scientism stuff, no?
Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that some vaccines are, to some extent, effective or something. But then, it's like, you haven't even addressed the idea, is like a diet and all of that going to be the most effective way to, which I believe would be the most effective way to deal with diseases and opportunistic infections and shit like that.
but that is not even entered into the equation. It's like, well, we need to inject people. So you got all these weak, sickly people walking around, and we need to inject them with viruses to make
them.
They're
grown on, like, animal cells and all that. Like, they're grown on animal cells and things like that. So you're mixing, like, the human sort of biology with all these bestial, like, you know what I mean? Diseases and all that.
Yeah, but then, and then another thing, too, is that, so they go into all that. They come up with these wild concoctions to inject into people. When a lot of times too, like some sort of vitamin supplementation, like a B12 shot or something like that, has a much better effect than the so-called vaccines. And that's another thing that's been proven. It's like if people, they come into, they get some disease or something like that, they get an injection of B12 and they're fine. It's like they had a deficiency in something that was on a nutritional level, and if they address that, they're fine. And it's like, well, could you have taken a different route and injected them with some sort of weakened virus or something like that? Well, yeah, but that could have been done, or you could inject them with a saline solution and have a placebo effect. There's hundreds of different things you could do. It doesn't make them worthwhile to do, you know?
And you know what's funny is that...
that's a really good point.
You know, you know how there's animal, you know, body parts in the vaccine, right? How many vegans have come out?
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, Chris, good point.
There's one as well that was like this woman that she had this like crazy mad cervical cancer, and it's grown up, like her cells are used, and it's mad. It's like, the woman's cells grew at an unprecedented like rate, and it was late, like years later when her family and all that ever found out about it or something. I can't remember her name now. Have you ever heard about that? No?
So are there any pictures that
was her name.
Are there any pictures of people like Jonas Salk holding up the 666 symbol?
No, but Jay Dyer read all of his books.
Jay Dyer?
Interesting cast of characters that ended up at the Salk Institute.
Do any of them have the 666 symbol or like the one eye?
You know who Leo Szilard is?
Jay Dyer did a video about his book.
Billy? You know who he is?
He joined Epoch B.
Do you know who Leo Szilard is?
No.
Well, he retired at the Salk Institute. You have no idea who Leo Szilard is.
That sounds familiar.
S-Z-I-L-A-R-D.
You don't know who Leo Szilard is?
Yes, I do.
Alright. You better, goddamn it.
Well, tell us who he was, Tom. Leo Szilard.
I think he was in the Manhattan Project or some kind.
Oh, and he's on vaccines, or with Salk Institute,
But didn't Salk say that, like the government should poison the food so it would, like, speed up the evolutionary process and, like, all the stupid people?
Is that what it is? Yeah, I need to go back.
That's in Jay Dyer's video. I think I got that from your podcast, Chris.
Yeah, I also posted, like, Jay sent me some excerpts out of that book, and I posted them on the blog. And, yeah, I was just blown away. I didn't know that book existed. And then...
I think it's called Survival of the Wisest.
Survival of the Wisest. And then he's going into how, the population needs to be reduced. Now, if that doesn't, if you can't conclude based on that there's something more to vaccines than what's being presented, then nothing's going to get, I mean, the guy, Jonas Salk, talking about how the, you know, the population needs to be reduced, you know, the stuff needs to be put into the food or to reduce the population. And then he's coming up with vaccines that are supposed to be extending life and health. It's just, if people can't see the disconnect there or the implications of that, then, yeah, they're just completely blind to it. I mean, they're just willfully ignorant of, yeah,
no,
so
you
vaccines are, yeah.
Sorry. Funny story about Leo Szilard is, of course, that he survived the Spanish flu. I mean, the biggest, if we have to believe it, but I guess there were some people dying. It's not like zero deaths. The biggest
funny
epidemic
about...
in modern time.
Yeah. Funny story about Leo Szilard is he made up nuclear bombs when he was waiting out a goddamn corner of the street and fucking in the.
I know. After the war,
another funny one about him. He used a radioisotope to cure his cancer. Oh, his mom's cancer actually. It was his mama's. Just like the Atom Smasher's little brother started fucking chemical cancer treatment with fucking isotope.
Chemotherapy.
John Lawrence. Yeah. No, chemotherapy is a different thing. You know where chemotherapy came from? It came from mustard gas. From the first
Yeah.
That's where that shit came from, Bubba.
Jesus Christ.
I would just take mustard. I will leave out the gas.
Well, yeah, whatever. Well, the shit, mustard gas is fucking a goddamn, it's gas. It's a weapon of mass destruction.
I know.
No, you didn't know that, motherfucker.
Of course I know that, man.
Yeah, sure you did.
Come on, man.
Yeah, come on.
Sean, are you angry right now?
No, I like to fuck with Guy, because he's full of shit.
But saying he's full of shit is like kind of like what I would think somebody who's angry would say.
No, he's full
it's
of
just
shit.
An angry.
I love that shit. I love talking shit. He called me a gorilla for like 4 days in a row. I asked him if he'd make sure, you know, really? You're just.
You angry though, did it?
No, it gave me an excuse to fucking not give a fuck. I'm going to let him have it. He's going
to
jump off the
you
bridge.
You don't need no excuses to not give a fuck. Come on, Sean.
No. For you, I don't.
Yeah. You never gave a fuck, so you don't know.
Yeah, but saying I don't give a fuck seems like an angry thing to say.
No, it's a healthy thing to say. You got to get there, dude.
So has anyone else ever asked you, Sean, if you're angry?
No. People love me when they meet me in real life. Actually, I'm a funny fucker. For real.
I didn't say you weren't. I agree that you're a funny fucker, but but I think that you're angry. You strike me as angry sometimes.
I don't know. Chris Kendall's met me a few times. Ask him if I'm angry.
No, you seem pretty chill, man.
You know what channel you're on there, Bubba's?
Hoaxbuster?
Yeah.
Chris's channel. This is Chris's show.
Yes, it is.
Hoaxbuster's call.
Hey, tell me about
what was that again? 1-2 check. Oh, I can't hear anybody now.
No,
well, we're waiting for.
No, it's Sean. He lives in Gorilla Land.
Well, Sean said I couldn't hear him.
Yeah, me either.
No,
he cut out.
These Mexicans fucking Texas connection.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
Right? Sean, what were you saying?
No, I don't know. I was just talking to Guy here for a second.
You cut out.
Yeah, you asked me something and then but you cut out.
No, I told Guy to ask you, you know. How angry I am. I'm a friendly motherfucker, dude. Just don't call me a gorilla for a few days in a row.
That,
I didn't call you a gorilla.
Yeah, you did, motherfucker. No, I asked you three times if you were or not, and you fucking didn't answer, bitch. Don't call me fucking gorilla. Please come to office and call me fucking gorilla.
I think that the quality of your research correlates with the anger level that you manifest.
I mean, you asked me to call you a gorilla, and then I asked you, hey, let me speak. What if I do this in real life, then you grab my throat, and you actually behave like a gorilla? I mean, that is kind of ironic, right?
If you walk up to me in real life and call me a goddamn mountain gorilla, I will snatch you by your fucking throat, and I will say, excuse me.
You see? Seriously. You see? You see?
Yes, you so fucking
see. You are confirming a point I didn't even make.
Well, I'm the one who is saying that Sean sounds angry to me, but Gaia, you sound like an ass. Like, you're provoking Sean unnecessarily.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we can move past this. I mean, yeah.
I love this shit. Yeah, come to Austin, call me a goddamn monkey, you fucking bitch.
Hey, Chris, it's your show, man.
Chris knows where Boomers is at, goddammit.
Yeah, someone who's triggered. Yeah.
Yeah, guy, you have to go to Sean's turf, and which is it? Boomer's parking lot, Sean, is where you want to meet Gaia.
You can meet me at the bar. Just tell any bartender, say, hey, I'm here. I got to see Sean. I'm going to call him a goddamn monkey. They're going to probably give you a cab ride and get the fuck out of there, but whatever. Try it.
The guy who's not very angry, but he just comes off as the angriest guy around town.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, so, yeah.
Chris Tunnels met me, but no one called me a monkey that night, so, yeah.
Nobody.
And neither did I, but you don't get that.
You did it all. You did it for 2 days in a row,
you
bitch.
You didn't get that nuance. I never called you like that.
You said I look in the mirror and I see a mountain gorilla. You didn't say that to no one else. And I asked you why the fuck you keep saying it to me, bitch. And you giggle.
You see this anger.
It's not anger. It's like, please, motherfucker.
Well, Gaia, you don't have to be so provocative.
My philosophy is the world looks so much better just over the edge.
That makes no sense, like every other fucking thing you say.
That means he's pushing people over the edge.
No, I'm not saying that.
Your dad wasn't crazy, you were, Bubba.
Gaia, I would say the biggest problem here is that you say that SMJ looks like a gorilla or he's a gorilla and it's because you believe in evolution. That's the bigger joke.
It ain't no joke. He don't say it to no one else. Who the fuck else he say that to? Show me somebody. You called a goddamn gorilla before on the fucking Discord app, bitch.
I didn't call
you someone
a gorilla.
Else, yeah, you did.
Oh, man.
Were you saying that in the context of evolution theory that we're all...
Yes.
We're all... Is that...
I mean, there's so much...
You didn't say it to no one else. Read the goddamn text. I asked you.
You
called me a gorilla? There's no fucking answer.
There are so many similarities between humans and apes.
Either you have to be a coincidence theorist
or have to explain it.
Chris, do you think that the...
Even fucking, Darwinian bullshit. Why don't you call him a gorilla?
I want to see what Chris would say when it comes to the similarities between primates, if the similarity as a genetic phenomena is significant.
There's also a lot of similarities.
Well, hang on, let me say what I was going to say. Is that there's also a lot of similarities between kangaroos and humans. I don't know if that's... But see, that doesn't support
the narrative that's being pushed. So they don't want to talk too much yeah. about the genetic similarity between humans and kangaroos, but there's apparently allegedly a lot of genetic similarities. There's also a lot of genetic similarities between humans and certain species of sea urchins. That doesn't support an evolutionary lineage, so they don't really talk about it. There's also genetic similarities. There's also chromosomal zonal differences that don't support any kind of lower, lesser to higher order, because if you go again to a sea urchin, they'll have a greater number of chromosomes. I think a tobacco plant has way more chromosomes than a human being. So that doesn't support this. So that's downplayed. So it's really cherry picking. So they could say there's similarities. There's also a vast amount of difference between apes and humans. And they'll say 98% similarity and repeat that like a mantra. But if mm-hmm. if the ape has, check this out, 48 chromosomes and a human being has 46, that two extra chromosomes represents quite a bit of genetic information, and it's way more than what would you would end up with a figure of 98%. It's more like 20%. So it's not even mathematically possible that we're 98% similar or 97% similar or even 96% to apes. So it's like, then again, too, we're operating off a presupposition that evolution is correct. And if you find these similarities, they support some kind of lineage, and they simply do not. If you take all the information in the aggregate,
I'm not talking about lineage. I'm not talking about lineage. I'm just talking about genetic, like genes in general, DNA. Do you think that DNA points to any similarities between organisms?
Well, do different organisms have DNA? That's what's told us, that all life forms on Earth have, you know, genetic DNA. Does that support evolution theory? It doesn't support
it. I'm not talking about that. I just want to find out whether or not you agree with the idea that DNA is a well-founded research study, if studying DNA makes sense to do.
You ever seen any DNA?
I myself have never seen it. I've never seen DNA. I mean, does it exist?
You're not answering my question, though. Sean says that I should be a lawyer, so I'm pushing you. I'm badgering the witness now, Sean. I mean, Chris, sorry. Do you support the study of DNA?
You should probably go to law school. You'd fucking love it. I forgot I said that, but I was right. God damn.
Do I support the study of DNA? I don't know. I mean, I don't necessarily support the study of anything. I mean, I don't know what it's how it's relevant.
You doesn't have to. The Rockefeller supports the study of molecular biology. That's already handled. Don't worry about all that.
Better put.
I mean, look at the health of the average person. I mean, what benefits are derived? I mean, they'll claim there's all these benefits derived, but you have to take each claim individually, man. I mean, that's what I do. I mean, you could say,
yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a broad general question that would have to be parsed and picked apart. Like in what specific context would genetic research have some sort of direct benefit or any apparent benefit at all? I mean, you'd have to have address a specific context in which it could be applied. You know, that's a very broad question. It's kind of like that vegan debate where it's kind of like everything was carefully couched within sort of like these very loaded and vague questions that kind of like would be suggestive of something but really didn't really say anything.
Well, I'll give you an example of a reason why to study the genetic similarities. Like, for example, between mice and other mammals,
because mice are a good model organism to do research on. So if you want to like do loads and loads of research studies on mammals, then just use mice. And mice are genetically similar to other organisms. I'm not saying that we have a common ancestor or that we have a common lineage. I'm just saying
What do you mean by genetically there?
Phil Blanks. I'm not Banks. I'm not banking on anything here. I'm blanking on it.
Have you you've heard of Gregory Bateson, right?
Yeah, he's the one who came up with the genetics. That's you've made that very clear, Sean.
That was his dad. That was his daddy. He taught you.
Okay.
That was William Bateson.
Yeah, but somebody had to come up with this shit.
Huh?
Somebody had to come up with all this shit.
It's the same motherfuckers that come up with this shit. They don't hire.
Chris, I'm saying that mice and mammals in general have to do with men. Of mice and men. I don't know what that is.
You think they can test medicine on mice and ooh, that works? Fucking people.
Everything, like any chemical, any toxin.
Why do you believe that?
Because it works.
How do you know it works? Really? Guy's going to get mad, but I always go back to this. They literally tell you they went to the fucking moon. Do you know how ridiculous that fucking is?
Come on, Sean.
This is straw man.
So you think they're doing mouse studies?
Think they're doing mouse studies.
Yes.
All right, cool. Believe them. Knock yourself out.
So Chris, do you believe that they're doing mouse studies?
Do you think are legit?
Yeah.
What percentage do you think they admit to fucking faking? They admit to faking. What percentage?
None.
Tell me about your fucking mice studies.
Okay, that's a good point. They didn't admit to faking the moon. They didn't admit to faking any mouse studies. All right. Fine.
No, they're like the people that run these journals. Nature? The bitch who runs Nature or whatever? Yeah. These peer-reviewed shit. Yeah, it's bullshit. They fucking tell you. They tell you it's bullshit. It's stories.
All right,
I really see that the straw man is your favorite fallacy.
I've heard they tested genetically modified corn on mice, and then they developed tumors, like giant tumors.
Yes.
But then they fudged the data to give it a different outcome. So it's like then the question is like, well, if you're going to conduct a study. And you're going to actually feed corn to mice and then subsequently like skew the data so it has a different outcome. What value is that? I mean, but then again too, it's just like I said earlier, you have to go into a specific context of what was trying to be proven, and then like address whatever presuppositions were dragged into the whole study to begin with. And then look at all the different variables involved and see if each one was addressed. And, you know,
you're asking, Chris, what's the value of the study, which is exactly what I'm asking. You know, is there any value in doing a test of food on or supposed food on mice in terms of studying the potential drawbacks or benefits of eating that food as a human? And I think that there is a lot of something like 90% of all medical research is done using model organisms, like something along those lines. 90 some odd percent of all research in medicine is done using model organisms.
I understand what you're saying. You're kind of repeating yourself. Here's the thing. I mean, this is, how many years has modern science, 100, 200 years, let's say 150 years of the scientific method and all of that. And we're still trying to they're still trying to figure out what foods is good for humans and what foods are not. That's absurd. I mean,
I agree.
This is something that's been understood,
ages ago. What's bad? Yeah. It's well understood that sugar is bad for people.
Yeah, but,
processed
but,
flour is bad for people.
You don't have to do more and more studies to figure out the genetics, though, for a second. Do you think that genetics? I totally agree with you about that. But do you think that genetics, like, and the use of model? Well, all right. So I said that the use of model organisms is a reason why using genetic similarity as a foundation for other research.
Slow down. What's a model organism?
It's the animal or whatever that's used for the study of any.
Maybe you're talking about a bacteriophage, shit like that.
I don't know what a bacteriophage is.
Yeah, you don't know what a bacteriophage is, but you believe in evolution.
It's the virus.
I didn't say I believed in evolution. I didn't say I believed in evolution.
All right, cool. Well, good for you.
I'm just asking. I'm just asking you guys. Chris doesn't believe in DNA. He says that DNA does not exist, or that he's never seen it. And I just wanted to find out if you believe that DNA existed and some other things similar
DNA,
to that.
He got pissed at me the first time I told him I didn't believe in it. Remember that? That was funny. That was a few years ago. I called in on the show and...
Some biological component, yeah. But then again, too, is it what it's claimed to be? I've heard other stuff, too, that, DNA is supposedly like the molecule that is the instruction for how to build an organism. But then I've heard stuff too that the DNA, the so-called DNA code is not sufficient to explain all the different, components of an organism. So there's not the information in there to instruct for building that. So there's something else beyond that. So it's like one component. So it's kind of like, does it exist? I'm not sure. I think it probably does. But then again, too, what is the question as far as like what is it presented to everybody? Is that accurate, or is there something other than like the idea of morphological fields? Like, is there any validity to that? And so that puts the DNA in a different role or a different light altogether. So it's kind of like, it's not the end all and be all biology, according to some other stuff that's out there. But then it's
what's
being
morphological
sort of
field?
Like, it's the idea that organisms, that, anything, plants, animals, there's sort of a field that's the it's sort of the blueprint, and it doesn't exist inside the DNA. It's sort of external. It's like an external,
Designed or nature or nurture? No. It's the design or intelligent design or natural selection or something like that. So it's like the intelligent design property of intelligent design,
which
that exists.
Is a false dichotomy in itself.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you, Gaia, for saying that.
Well, the naturalistic, materialistic philosophy says that, everything can be boiled down to particles of matter or atoms.
Right, right.
And there's other avenues of study that have concluded that's not the case, that there's such thing as these morphological fields or such thing as like like Rupert Sheldrake talks about, which I think, the stuff he talks about could be valid, could be not. I don't know. I don't have any way to confirm it, but it's like, here's an example, like the pest control industry with rats. I mean, they could put out a particular type of poison and give it to rats. And once the rats figure out that it's poison, they no longer eat it, so it's no longer effective. But the interesting thing about it is that rats that aren't have no contact with other rats that know that a particular rat bait is a poison will learn this information at a distance without any kind of way whatsoever that they could have gained it through direct observation or anything. It's at a distance. So there's some sort of way that organisms have to communicate, and there's some sort of like invisible telepathic communication field, like an invisible Wi-Fi internet that animals and even human beings sort of telepathically communicate. I think that's been demonstrated scientifically, but it's just not talked about. It's just not, because it doesn't fit the naturalist materialistic model.
Have you seen the Stanford researchers who talk about like Prometheus and like some Promethean man that is able to like has like that they basically do you believe that humans have these I mean that's what you're saying is like humans have extra sensory perception abilities like some supernatural abilities. Would you say that, Chris?
Well, then that's a question that presupposes that the models we're given as far as the naturalist materialism are correct, which I don't believe they are. So when you say supernatural, that's suggestive of an idea that there are things outside of, you know, matter and particles, but those are all just constructs that we've been handed. So that's a big, you know, question as far as like, what is the nature of reality to begin with? Like if we all just take for granted that, you know, modern science is correct and then everything resolves itself to particulate matter, then we can then address what would be considered supernatural and what would not be supernatural. That maybe everything is, you know, completely different from what we're told. And so that term supernatural doesn't really have any true meaning to it.
Yeah. I mean, first you need to define the playing field, and then you can know what is outside of that. Yeah,
because that's what I'm saying about, you know, coming into something with all these presuppositions that don't ever get addressed. You just kind of a lot of people just go forward with just taken for granted that the stuff that we're told is just nailed down and proven beyond doubt, but it's not. So there's that.
There's a YouTuber, his channel is called New Thinking Aloud, and he has a guy named Jason Reza Giorgiani on those are his most popular episodes with that guy, and Jason Giorgiani talks about how humans have for instance he talks about how the Aborigines were met with the British who asked them like how do you know that the hunting party has succeeded, because they had left and they were coming back, they were on their way back after having succeeded, and he said, well, you guys have a radio that you talk to each other with what's in your hand, and we have a communication mechanism, and they point to their hearts.
Yeah, I've heard of that account. And I think there's, that could be just a made up story, but then again, too, I don't think so. I think there's validity to that. And then we are kind of this denatured product, domesticated worker slaves in the system called civilization. So we don't have our full functioning on a lot of levels. Our eyesight, our, you know, our immune systems, our overall health. I think our lives are cut short. You know, like what's the average age? 75, maybe 80 is I think that human beings are designed to live longer than that, probably up to, you know, maybe 100. And I think the average lifespan should be up to around 100 and old. There's a lot of stuff I've heard that would suggest that, like studies of people who lived in so-called primitive cultures and their accounts. And then there's accounts of people, you know, living even much older than that.
What age did you just say?
140, 150 years old. Like that. I've heard this, and it makes sense, is that if any mammal, and you know, humans are mammals, and that's our designation biologically, that if you take the age of maturation and times 7, then that should be your lifespan. And that's been observed. That's something that's, you know, can be objectively observed out in nature, that's normally the case with wild animals, but not humans. So like if you were to take age of maturation times 7, which is age, you know, full maturation is around when you're in your 20s, early 20s.
I have a reason to suggest why it might be. Well, you know, obviously we live in like cities, and that's an unnatural biological construct. But the reason why that, when I was looking for some explanation of this, the people who you're talking about that live past 110, they're called super centenarians. And they all seem to have one very interesting, they have many interesting commonalities, but the one that doesn't get talked about is that they all seem to live like people that live to 140. Like I've seen accounts
without,
of people
without
who, like,
stress and
well, yeah, okay. So stress, but which kind of stress? And the stress that I want to say is that these people live in like remote villages. Usually they live in very like not just relaxed and low density villages. But they don't go and travel, like they don't go and expose themselves to getting sick from other people. They live, you know, naturally naturally unstressed lives, and the low stress as well is low stress of microbiological stress. Like they don't get sick. And the reason why I'm saying that they don't get sick is because they don't go and travel a whole lot. They live
my position is the exact opposite.
Well, I mean,
I can say it, I can prove it. I mean, since I was traveling, I never got sick.
Yeah, but Gaia, like, that's the thing, like, you're exposed to a whole lot more foreign biological material,
germs.
You're exposed to a whole lot more germs.
So your body automatically builds up resistance to that.
But you have to have time to kill it off.
I don't believe in germ theory either.
What do you believe?
I believe the body becomes toxic, and that's how you get sick.
Amen.
But what about,
I agree.
Hey, Rotto.
G'day. Hey, guys. G'day, Chris. G'day, guys. I feel all my 140 years, look 140 years old, because, yes, all the toxins I put in my body. But, yeah, I agree. I don't agree in the germ theory. I think the germ theory is...
And when you're sick, your body's trying to get rid of those toxins.
That's it, man. Amen.
Well, I guess you don't subscribe to the research study that I pointed out, where they injected these poor mice with bacteria, and then they got sick and died.
Well,
all right,
well,
that's just, that's Kelly.
That's not how you would naturally have bacteria put into your system.
Yeah, I could inject myself with heroin and, you know, and die. You know, there's nothing natural about injections.
Yeah. Well,
the skin is there to protect you from hypodermic needles and things like that. Unless you go
well,
to
people
the
still get sick.
He injects you with shit that you don't know what it is. It's, you know, flu vaccines and what shit. You know. All of that is wrong. 100 years, it's fucking snake oil crap. Yeah. But
yeah,
I've looked into a lot. Sorry, go Phil.
Well, I just wanted to say that if there is a theory about how to live long, how to live to 140 years old, that would be very useful to contribute. So if you guys have a non-toxifying approach to living, then by all means show it and show its effectiveness. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, Charlotte Gerson has written books about it. It's called the Gerson therapy. If you get sick, you can basically go. I know that Chris Kendall has a problem with vegans and vegetarians, but that's younger ones. But I think if you do go and ruin your body with all this, what do you call it, processed food, crap food that we eat in the West, just go back to a simple diet of, if you can get it, organic food, vegetarian food, and your body will come good. I mean, it's been proven that people that are sick, have got lumps and bumps, it's gone away, and you can get better that way. I don't know. Who wants to live to 140? Maybe Chris Kendall does. I don't know.
That's a good question. But also there is a point of one size fits all, and that's bullshit. I mean, we're all individuals, and things work individually.
And there's another study where they took 30 pigs who live outside, and then the pigs who live in a clean, sterile environment, and the pigs who live outside were healthier than the...
I'm not
suggesting to live in an artificial environment that way. I'm suggesting that that those people who live in not necessarily secluded, but and not necessarily even isolated, but just relaxed, low density environments next to the water.
I mean, it's impossible to study these things because there are so many individual differences between every subject of that study, and that's what Chris was saying, that scientism, let's say, tries to lump it all together, and that's the whole point.
Yeah. I mean,
there's no one solution.
If you think there's validity to studies, and you want to go into something that is, a body of work that has a lot of documentation, a lot of photographs, and from someone who studied primitive cultures or societies, that would be Weston Price. I'm sure most of y'all have heard of him.
Oh yeah.
If you go into his body of work and all that, and you look at how thoroughly documented and all that is, I think it's persuasive. It's persuasive to me, and it makes sense to me. You know, it's like I don't believe that people who are living, in these cultures were going around sick and they had all the diseases that modern humans do. Because I don't believe that nature generates sickness as a default. You know, you don't have. You know, you'll have conditions where you can see maybe, you know, like animal populations getting diseased, but that in the context of, you know, them having their natural predators removed out of the ecosystem and all these other, you know, extraneous stuff that is imposed on them through civilization,
But in the wild, the nature and how it works, that it's not, disease is not the default. It's not the common thing. So why would it be for humans living more in nature? And they ate a lot of animals. There is no cultures that live, you know, off any, these so-called vegetarian or vegan diets. They just didn't exist. No, and then, you know, Weston Price documented that their bone structure, their teeth and everything was superior to people living in a civilization. And it's documented with photographs. You know, there's all these photos of these people living in these primitive cultures, eating a natural diet, eating stuff that they've hunted, they've gathered out of their environment. And they're obviously healthier. It's apparent. I mean, it's right there. I mean, and as far as like a study goes or anything that would establish something scientifically, I think that body of work right there, if you wanted to delve into it, should convince you or at least be compelling. But as far as like people pushing this vegan shit, it's like, what do they have to go off of? Modern science?
No, Chris, listen. There was a guy called Max Gerson that had terrible migraines, and yeah, he was living in a modern sort of, you know, like when we live in modern society, that's when we get rats and we get cockroaches and you know, when we're all live close together in little bloody buildings, like little flats and whatnot in cities, that's where all the rats congregate. That's why you get cockroaches. And we get all, if you're living on, I agree with you. If Weston Price was like out there with all, you know, people living out in nature and how we're supposed to probably live, this guy, Max Gerson, went up against the allopathic medical system and tried diet, and it's been proven. He proved it. And why do you think they killed him? He was bumped off.
What? He was killed? What?
Yeah, he was bumped off. Max Gerson was bumped off.
Well, I mean, the difference between, but you're saying that your belief on diet would fall on the side of Max Gerson?
Just to save yourself.
As opposed to Weston Price, I mean.
Chris, I agree totally with you out there, hunting and gathering, eating meat and whatnot. I'm just saying, if you've poisoned your body in the modern world, you know, with processed food, crap food, and you want to get better, the only way to do it is to go to a clean, pure vegan diet. And once you get better, go back to your normal diet. That's all I would
say. Yeah, but then that's suggestive of the idea that eating meat somehow toxifies you.
Yeah.
Which it does.
But look at the way.
Hang on.
Sorry, Chris. Go,
hey,
Chris.
Hang on.
Sorry.
If you're eating processed meat that's got stuff added to it, chemicals and shit and hormones and all that, you're talking about two completely different things, man.
Yeah, good point.
It's like that's the thing too. It's like that's not dealt with in a lot of these discussions. So it's so maybe Gerson had something there in a limited sort of confined context, but that doesn't prove that that's some sort of an ideal diet. Maybe it has a detoxifying effect and then there's benefits from that. But the idea that that's some diet to live off of, that's not established by that you can demonstrate short-term effects, because they're taking people and they're putting them in this clinical environment and they're, you know, giving them these detoxifying diets. And then there's no long-term things. But if you want to bet the long term, or you can establish that it's a healthy diet to live off of, then you'd go to somebody like that would establish it. Okay, what would be an ideal diet? And it's like,
you cut out there, Chris. You cut out there. What was that?
Yeah,
Chris, you cut out there. Just
no,
as you said, you cut out. Go back to what you were saying. If you want to go, don't forget Gerson, you cut out just at that point. Go back.
Oh, I'm just saying, like, as opposed to Weston A. Price, I'm not saying that these end all be all, but if you're going to go into something that's established through documentation, that would be a place to go. I mean, like with the Max Gerson thing, you have a lot of anecdotal accounts and stuff like that. And then you have a, demonstration of something that's applied in a very kind of constrained or limited context. And then short term, you can maybe establish something that's beneficial short term, but you know, an extended period or something that's, you know, going to give you years of vital health, you would go to something like Weston Price and look at what he's put out there as far as like studying these primitive cultures. And I think that has more, I'm more persuaded by that than I would be. And it just makes more sense.
It does.
The stuff that
we are natural beings, and to be close to the natural environment and eating meat, real meat, hunting, and fishing, that is part of ourselves.
Yeah, it's this whole circle of life thing and all of that.
Yeah.
And then that's what, and then civilization is always trying to get us further and further removed from that. And then now you have in the modern day this promotion of this vegan diet thing, and that's just a continuation of extracting, you know, domesticated slaves out further and further out of the natural order of things. And that's always been the progression. So why should it be any different with this heavy, you know, the freaking, Prince Harry or whatever, they're promoting veganism and all that. I mean, that should tell you something. Do you think they actually eat vegan?
Not only that, come on, Chris. There's T. Colin Campbell, there's, who's wrote the China Study. I don't know if you've read that book. It's a fantastic book.
Totally bogus.
I think the guy's got something to him. There's John Robbins, who wrote Diet from New America. We've got Patria King, Quest for Life, a lovely guy called Ian Gawler, Australian down here, You Can Conquer Cancer. They're all saying if you want to get better, you've treated your body like shit, you've got cancer, that what would you rather do? Would you rather go through cut, burn, and poison? Or, like, I'm just saying, trying to get better.
False dichotomy again. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if you got people like Richard Branson and Bill Gates and Bill Clinton and Al Gore and Prince Harry and the royals promoting something,
raw milk,
that should probably
stay away from it. Yeah.
Stay away from it.
Chris,
all right.
Fair enough.
I would tell you that's not the way to go.
If you were to take what Rollo is saying about eating a very strict regimen of high-quality vegetables the same way that the vegans kind of talk about the same thing, but not for, like, the same health benefits, but at the same time also eating a strict, high-quality supply of meat, would you take that as a good quality diet?
I don't think vegetables are good for you. A lot of the stuff that they claim is good for you, like broccoli and shit like that, is really not good for you. It gives me horrible gas. Broccoli just gives me, like, why when I eat broccoli do I get the hellacious gas?
But it's
because my body,
it's
I'm
all
not digesting
personal.
It's causing me problems digesting the whole thing.
I mean, there are always people claiming this is the one solution for all. No, you have to find it out yourself. It's all personal. It's all individual.
Well,
We're all different people.
You got to use your common sense too. It's like,
of course,
plants. How do they defend themselves? Well, they generate toxins. They also generate compounds that prevent you from uptaking nutrients. So, like, you can eat certain plants and they'll cause you to starve to death, literally starve to death. You know, because they have compounds that prevent you from uptaking nutrients. That's how they defend themselves.
I think,
and Chris,
I think
but not eating any plant is the other extreme. It's like veganism.
You could be fine without eating any plants at all. You can be totally fine.
And Chris,
like plants are not good for you.
Chris, if you look at even on the mainstream, you know, nutrition facts site, you take one liver, and your liver it's got all your nutrients for the day, right?
You can absorb those nutrients too. That's a great thing about eating liver.
To get that kind of nutrients in plants, you'd have to eat like a freaking forest.
Yeah, pine cones and everything. Just start chomping them down. You better get busy because the majority of your day is going to be spent preparing food. Like these vegans too, they have to eat a lot and it just feels satiated.
Or a can of a little can of sardines has like 120% of your vitamin B12. Just that little can.
Yeah, I mean, that should tell you something. I mean, that's just common sense. I mean, it's just gonna. What do you want to do? Do you want to spend all your time in meal prep and all that, or do you want to just get something like a like liver that will give you all the stuff right there?
Sardines, or
you know, raw oysters, or
and
stuff that will give you nutrient content that your body can absorb. You know, that's what I want.
And the vegans say that
raw milk.
They're always referencing Japan, but Japan, yeah. Like their main food is like raw fish.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and most of those fish are bottom dwellers who are eating the shit, literally, of the bottom of the ocean. I mean, yeah, I mean, there are so many schools. There is not one right and not one wrong. And I will cut out from this debate for
I'm
now.
I'm starting to lean towards raw meat.
Yeah, I mean, it you could try it and then reap the benefits and then, I mean, then prove it. Yeah, like you're saying, prove it to yourself. That's all I can say. I mean, there's all this anecdotal stuff out that's being pushed out there. And then, and I think that's the better way is to, what makes more sense as far as in a wider context or something that would be more in line with nature and reality as opposed to, you know, some kind of construct that's been developed just very recently in the modern day for just that also happens to be aligned with the Agenda 21 and the sustainability and greening and all this other horseshit that's being promoted.
I just can't believe like some quote-unquote, you know, truthers would adopt, like, the UN
stance. Yeah, towing the UN line, it's pretty amazing. I mean, I don't understand that. I mean, that I would think that would steer people away from it, you know, just looking at who's promoting it, like Beyonce. I mean, give me a fucking break. But, does she actually eat vegan? No, fuck no. They talk about, like, how, you know, she caters in these you know, she's doing these video shoots and then she has this catering bringing all this, you know, high dollar meat and shit. And, then turns around and promotes vegan diets. You know, it's like, that should tell you something. There's no reason for any individual to do that, to be duplicitous on that level, unless they're serving some sort of an agenda.
And
they obviously are.
Yeah. But I have to say the shit is spreading because my buddy, he plays professional soccer in Spain.
Uh-huh.
He's drinking the vegan. He's going on vegan diet.
Drinking the vegan Kool-Aid.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. It's gonna be a lot more people get on it too because what the top NFL quarterback is promoting it, and it was interesting. I was reading. This interview with him, and then he admits in the interview that he's not strict vegan, but then it's odd. The wording is as if he is, and it's just like, no, the dude says he's not vegan, and it's like, but then it's sold and promoted as if he's vegan, and he's not, and that's another thing too, and I pointed that out in that debate too. It's like, oh, here's this MMA fighter that he did the same thing. He positioned himself as vegan, and then it turns out it was probably because he was caught in a restaurant and seen as like he's scarfing down fish and stuff. And it's like, oh, and then he had to admit that he's fish, he eats meat and everything else most likely, but he's promoting the vegan. Why would he promote vegan diets? It's because he was told to, and it's to serve an agenda. They can go out, these high-profile celebrities and stuff could go out and promote veganism. Do they have to eat vegan? No, fuck no. No, absolutely not. But they'll promote it because they're told to. They're being paid to.
And that's what's going on. And you gotta ask yourself why. Is it been,
Now all the chefs too are, all the famous chefs are all going vegan, like Gordon Ramsay.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
He's gone vegan.
Oh, he went vegan. Are you serious?
I don't think so. Hey, I've got to shoot off. I've got to shoot off shortly, guys, but could I have a quick, Chris Kendall, have you done any hoax busting on this Santa Fe, shooting? Have you got any thoughts on that? If you don't mind me changing the subject?
I don't know much about it at all. I've heard there was another shooting and I haven't even looked at it. I just heard about it.
Okay.
I haven't even.
It looks dubious as hell. I just thought you might have had a quick look into it, but that's okay. This guy wheelchairs out Ironside style and says, yeah, we already know everything that's going on before even CNN went. Fox was covering it basically, and then CNN were late to the game because they were too busy bloody covering this silly wedding in England or whatever. But there you go. I just thought you might be, how's our old mate doing? Your mate, forgot his name. John Adams says, what's he up to? I haven't heard him on air for quite a while. Is he all right? Is everything cool with him?
Oh yeah. I've spoken to him recently, and he seems to be doing well, and everything's good. Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, maybe when you guys look into the hoax busting on this, because it looks shoddy. They already had all the, you know, straight away within hours, you know, the shooter's background and this, that, and the other. It really looks shoddy to me, but. Anyway, it'd be something to look into on Hoax Busters Call.
Oh yeah, I may get around to looking at it. It's kind of just kind of become so routine now that it's kind of like it's just a routine thing now. And then you see these, and then they have to be
When they wheelchaired the governor of Texas out because he's in a wheelchair. Old mate, one of the presidential candidates, I forgot his name, was right there at the same time as well for the press conference, like an hour after the shooting or something. It's just amazing.
Just happened to be in the neighborhood.
Yeah, he was right there. I forgot his name.
Rick Perry, was it?
Was it Rick Perry?
It was in Texas, right?
It was in Texas.
Santa Fe, New Mexico. Yeah, might have been because he ran for president or was one of the contenders.
Yeah, he was going up against Trump.
Like I said, I haven't seen anything on it. I've just, heard about it, but that's about it. Like, Dr. Flick told me. But, that's about all I know.
No problem.
Yeah, thanks for,
You're still doing I haven't checked out you guys. Are you still doing it every Monday? Every Monday?
I haven't been recently because I've been,
You still traveling and whatnot?
Yeah, traveling or doing stuff that kind of keeping me occupied.
You said you're on the border there of California, and there was that. What was that town again that you're in? I looked up that town. It was like an interesting town to be in. In the middle of nowhere.
Kerrville.
That town. One. Yeah. That looked like fun.
Yeah, it's not so bad. I'm in Motel 6 right now. Taking a break from the ranch, and it's getting pretty hectic over there with all the festival goers moving in and the volunteers moving in, and they're trying to get everything sorted out, so they take a break for a few days, and before I return back, things will kind of sort themselves out over there. So it's going good though so far.
Keep it up, keep up the good work, and I'll keep listening.
All right.
All right. I'll head out, but yeah.
Okay.
See you guys.
Okay, take care. But yeah, that's interesting about just thinking about the, like Rollo's brought up the Gerson therapy there. And so I looked into that myself. I actually have the book, or I did have it. And it has an emphasis on juicing. So what you do is you have this, and it recommends getting like a high-end juicer. And I even considered like getting one of these. I was trying to maybe find one that was used, or because they're very expensive. They're like $3,000 for one of these things.
What?
I would say, oh, that, you know, this would be the healthiest, greatest thing, and it'd probably be cheaper in the long run. And then I was like looking into it, like, yeah, in the long run, if you can extract nutrients out of vegetables like that, then, you know, the thing would, you know, eventually pay for itself, you know, if you can get it cheaper. But then thinking about it, it's like juicing is like, how is that going to happen in nature? You know, you take a carrot and absolutely squeeze every last bit of juice out of it. You're not going to do that in nature, a natural setting. You're not going to be out there in the woods with a juicer, you know, juicing your tubers and all that. So that's another thing. It's like, yeah, you have to have this apparatus in order to accommodate this diet. And it's like,
yeah. And with the juicing plant, they want you to put like 6 carrots, like 2 apples.
Oh, it's a shit ton of stuff. Yeah. That you juice. But then, how is that, in accordance with the nature?
Like it's impossible to eat in like one sitting.
Yeah. It's stuff that that volume of plant material would be, just totally impossible.
Too much fiber.
Oh yeah, that's the point of it, is to not eat all fiber, because it's another thing too. And I noticed that when I was using in a blender, I would just blend the carrots and blend, you know, the spinach leaves and all that in there. And you're ingesting like a shit ton of fiber. And like I would do that for a couple of days, and then like about, you know, or on the second or third day, I'd be like, nope, I'm not gonna. I just can't handle any more juice. I just can't, because your body has to work really hard to break down all that fiber, and it makes you sort of fatigued, like, you know. But Gerson therapy, and it's